Good morning. I'd like to welcome everybody to the December 4, 2017 meeting of Chelan Public Utility District. This morning we have a study session and this afternoon business session, and we have a very full agenda. A lot of things to cover. It's a budget hearing and discussion on AMI, so it's going to be a filled day. To facilitate the flow of the meeting, I would like to remind everybody that this meeting is being recorded, and so if you wish to speak to any item on the agenda today, we ask that you come up to the table and use the remote microphone there to state your name and address for the record, and then share with us your thoughts on any agenda item. We also ask that if you have your cell phone on you and it's not in a silent position, please check it now and have it silent. That really helps in the flow of the meeting. And we will start this morning's meeting. Oh, by the way, everybody is in attendance at this meeting. Commissioner McKenna is attending by phone, and he is on the phone. And so all of the regular staff and all commissioners are here at the meeting. But we'll start our meeting today, as we always do, with a Pledge of Allegiance and a Safety Minute led by Larry Peterson.
Microphone right there.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Now, before Larry starts, he did say to me that he said, I have an hour for this presentation. And I said, as long as your boss will let you take.
Everybody up for an hour?
Actually, I think Dave has us narrowed down to a safety moment.
Thanks, Dave.
My name is Larry Peterson. I'm a Journey Water Tech from Holly Street. As all of you may know, actually, none of you may know, December is Safe Toys and Gift Months. So we focus on safety all the time, and we have Dave and the other guys to help us remind us of that, but it's important to remember safety at home, too, and especially during the gift season. So I have 10 tips to help us maybe buy appropriate and keep an accident from happening at home. So number one, buy age-appropriate toys. Children will often let you know if you buy something under their level, but they're not so good about letting you know if you've bought something over their level. So try to buy age-appropriate toys. Kids can grow into shoes and clothing, but when it comes to small pieces and parts, it's probably not a good idea. Number two, be aware of what's not considered safe this season. There's a lot of websites and advocate groups out there that'll let you know what's not good to get for many reasons. Maybe it falls apart or breaks, or perhaps it's got lead paint or something else wrong with it. Number three, read the warning and safety precautions accompanying the toy. These will give you a good idea of suitability and issues, if there's issues for the toy, for the child in question. If it's a kid that's always taking things apart, it's probably best to get him something that doesn't come apart easily. Number four, read the instructions accompanying the toy. Yes, read the instructions. If you cannot understand the instructions and the retailer isn't able to help you out, put it back, return it, get something else, move on. Number five, avoid getting anything that has excessive strings or cords. These things can be strangulation hazards or anything. Number six, buy for durability. With small children, durability is essential. Check that the item cannot be broken easily and ask yourself what happens if the toy does become broken. Does it release some kind of a toxic hazard or splinters or shards of glass? Number seven, inspect all gifts as the children open them. If you get something, if your child gets something from somebody perhaps outside this room and maybe they weren't here today to get these safety tips, make sure that it meets the same requirements as something that you would buy for the child. Number eight, take allergies and food sensitivities into account when purchasing gifts for any age group. Adults and children can be sensitive to food and nut allergies, so we have to remember these things also. Number 9, take time to explain how to use the toy or gift to anyone who needs the instructions. If your child is aware of how to use the toy properly, they may take care of it, and it's less likely to get broken, causing an injury. And number 10, ask all gift recipients to be conscious of where they've placed their items after they've been opened. It's a large family gathering, and everybody's sitting around having a great time. Make sure that the older kids don't just leave the stuff laying around for the younger ones to grab and break and harm themselves with. Last year, there were 217,000 injuries to children, so that's that. And as always, as we roll into 2018, for safety, remember to see something, say something, and let's not be a victim of 2020 hindsight. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you. Nice.
Appreciate it.
Very nice safety minute. Commissioners, item 2 on our agenda is the approval of the agenda, and it's at this moment in time that any item on the regular agenda can be moved to consent or vice versa, and it's a time that if there's anybody in the audience that wishes to make a request to be added to the agenda, we can consider that. I'm looking, I think mostly we have staff here this morning, staff and media. We have had a recommendation from staff to move Resolutions 13, 14, 15, and 17 to the consent agenda. What is the wish of the commission? Would that meet with your approval?
Yes. Yes. Commissioner, maybe I want to point out that there was one change to Resolution 13, which is the final acceptance with Hearst, and I don't want to wait till later because it shouldn't, but it may impact your desire to move it to consent, and that is that the final acceptance or the completion date stated in the draft agenda of October 16th was an erroneous date. It was actually November 16th. So the draft resolution has been updated simply to reflect the correct date. It's not material change, but it is for accuracy.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
They were 13, 14,
15, and 17.
And 17. Thank you.
So hearing no objection, we will move those 4 resolutions to the consent agenda. All right. Item 3, Rocky Reach Bridge Crane update.
Right, Pickford up. I think this is an interesting example of some of the things that we discover through our asset management process. We bring it forward not just to describe to you what's going on with the bridge crane, but also give you a sense of what happens when we really do intensive asset management work. With that, turn it over to Brett.
Good morning. Brett Bickford, Director of Engineering and Project Management. And this morning I'd like to talk about the district value of operational excellence and the strategic objective of maintaining our assets and how those are exhibited through a project that we currently have going on rehabilitating the bridge cranes at Rocky Reach. There's 2 bridge cranes at Rocky Reach. Each is 250 tons. Through the asset management process, we identified that these bridge cranes needed to be rehabilitated urgently and in the middle of our rehabilitation program. And so we awarded a contract in May 2016 for about $4.4 million. The objective was to insert this project in between the first and the second C8211 turbine runner repair project. But unfortunately, it was delayed a little bit because of the head cover issues we had on that first unit. And so the work was able to get underway this August. So this is a photo standing from the generator floor at Rocky Reach looking up at one of the bridge cranes. In the middle foreground there, that's actually a mobile crane with its boom up helping disassemble the unit. But some nomenclature on the bridge cranes is the bridge cranes span between the two, the up and downstream wall, the walls of the powerhouse. A bridge crane gantries up and down the powerhouse, and it has a trolley that has the hoisting equipment on it that travels up and down, upstream and downstream. And the bridge crane travels on gantry trucks or wheels that allows it to travel along the rails. So the scope of this project was to completely disassemble and inspect the cranes. It also included replacement of all the electrical equipment and controls, refurbishment of the 250-ton main hoisting equipment, and refurbishment of the gantry and trolley drive equipment. So that lower picture shows some of that shafting and gears that are used to drive that crane. So the current status is our disassembly and inspections are all complete. And so I'm going to show some pictures of a number of cracks that we found and material defects that we have found as we were doing this inspection. And so our first set of photos is on our trolley. And so the scope was, again, to completely remove and disassemble all the trolley, both of the trolleys. These are quite heavy pieces of equipment, so we actually had to engineer a hole through the roof of the powerhouse and set up a 550-ton mobile crane on the deck to pick these components off and to set them down on the floor so where they could be disassembled. The original contract scope just had these trolleys being visually inspected and then some modifications done to them to add supports for new equipment. But since we had a little bit additional time and some of our lessons learned on some of our other projects, we identified it'd probably be best to completely remove all the paint. And in this case, it allowed us to get rid of all the lead paint that was on there so we could have good access to do inspections of the welds. And lo and behold, we found a significant number of cracks. We did some engineering analysis to determine which cracks needed to be repaired. And then those cracks on both of the trolleys resulted in some field work orders to go ahead and do some repairs. And these photos you can see kind of circled with the white chalk, a major crack that we couldn't see until it was sandblasted. And then again, with this poor weld, there's a number of cracks, little hairline cracks that you can't see until you can completely sandblast and paint. So again, by doing this extra effort, it helped us to find things. We're trying to get this equipment to last, again, another 50 years. And so it's important that we find these now and get them repaired so we don't have unexpected issues in the middle of trying to do a major project. This is a photo showing some weld repairs that were done. And then now this trolley has been completely repainted, and it's back in the powerhouse where it's getting the new electrical and control equipment mounted to it. We also removed and found that our trucks, and there's 16 of them total, and again, these trucks are kind of the wheel assemblies for the cranes. When those were taken down, again, we picked them off through the hole in the roof, set them down on the ground where they could be disassembled. We found quite a number of weld defects. We found that each one of what we call, this is kind of a round boss. It's to distribute the load from the axles through the plate steel, and every one of those had a crack in them. So we did an engineering analysis to determine that those structures were overstressed. And so then we came up with an alternate design shown in this picture where we've got a tube of a much higher strength material, and it's much longer that we've welded in. And this is some of the work that's actually going on as we speak. Last week I was there at the shop talking with the prime contractor and their subcontractor that's doing this work to help make sure we're only doing the work that's necessary to do and trying to do it expeditiously as possible so we minimize our impact to the C8 to C11 turbine work. What we're doing in this photo is now that we've put this new strength and tube in here, we need to make sure that this new tube and what we call this bore is in alignment with the wheel axle bores. And what we found on the first eight is that six of those are going to need remachining or re-line boring so that all those bores are in alignment horizontally and vertically so that we don't put unequal load on the shafts as those cranes are traveling up and down the powerhouse. So in summary, we completely disassembled this equipment. That was in the scope of the work. And because we didn't know for sure how much repairs would be required, we proposed that that work be done T&M. And so what we're seeing from all the defects that we found is it's going to impact our project by about 4 months. But we're working to try to minimize those schedule delays with our contractors. So this will impact the C9 turbine repair project. So we won't be able to start that beginning of the year, as we had hoped, will probably be April. So this additional work is estimated to cost about $550,000, and it'll be executed through a number of field work orders. So our contract price will be increasing to about $5.25 million. We're not bringing the project for a budget revision because the repair work's being done O&M. We still think this is the best approach to handle projects like this, because we did our internal analysis before we bid the project and identified that to buy the new cranes, we would be close to about $8 million. And so we're still under by going ahead and doing this repair work by about $2 million.
Questions?
Brett? Yes, I've got one. The new sleeve in the truck that with the new material, was that fabricated in-house also?
The new material was a tube that was bought, so it was made at a mill, but we actually are having contractors do that work over in Spokane.
Okay.
So all this work, the sandblasting, the weld repairs are all being done under contract.
Okay.
So, Brett, question on the bore alignment. Is that the result of new equipment that we're putting in place, or is that the result of a discovery made from the original?
When we inspected the original equipment, we found that it looked like, from our field measurements, that we might have some misalignment in those bores, because we did find wear on the wheels that looks like as they were kind of crabbing along, so to speak. So it's rubbing on one side as it's driving down the track. We also saw that the axles had more wear on one side of the axle than the other, so that's showing it's got more forces on one side. And so when we did put this on a very precise, this machine here does the line boring, but it also has a little tool that you can touch all the surfaces that puts it in a computer and plots it. And our tolerances for this type of equipment are about 10 thousandths. And so we can plot that and make sure that those axle bores are parallel, perpendicular, and they're not deviating in kind of the 6 degrees of freedom. And so this allows us to be even probably more precise than original manufacturing. So then we can hopefully get even longer life going forward.
And so that was pretty much a result of the age or of overstressing?
So our theory is that because it probably wasn't built to as high a precision as it should be, they might not have had the tools to do it back then, the measurement techniques, is then that caused some of that overstress. If it was probably perfectly balanced, it might not have overstressed it to the same degree, so we saw everyone having a failed weld. But when we ran our analysis, even if it was precisely made, it would be overstressed.
Yeah.
So we fixed the overstress issue. We've also are going to reassemble it now more precisely so that we hopefully get a longer life.
Great. Good job.
Great. There's some just visually incredible welding.
Yeah. Yeah.
In here.
Yeah. That shop's doing a really good job.
Yeah.
And these are all original equipment.
All original from the late 50s.
So they're 70 years old? Yeah.
See, bridge cranes and B-52 is about the same age.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hey, the Alcatel Nokia contract.
We're going to cover a couple of fiber issues. I'm going to invite Mike Coleman and Bob Shane to come up, and we'll start with the Alcatel Nokia contract.
Good morning, Bob Shane, Fiber and Telecom Director.
Good morning, Mike Coleman, Managing Director, Fiber and Telecom.
I don't have any cool pictures like Brett had, but our system being the photons, you can't see them anyway, so it would be pretty blank. We're here to talk about the Alcatel contract extension 0333. As a reminder, the Alcatel system is our primary manufacturer of our fiber-to-the-home system that we use here in Chelan County. We're here to continue the sole source declaration of that Alcatel contract. We're also here to extend the contract to lock in the favorable terms that we currently receive through that contract. Our current contract expires on December 31st, 2018. We're here to add $9.12 million to the existing contract. for equipment and services to support our public power benefit and the ongoing system maintenance and capital projects. We're not looking for any board action today. Give you a little quick background. In 2003, we entered into the sole source contract with Alcatel. That was to purchase the equipment, including the warranty and support services of that system. In 2007, 11, and 13, we came back and extended the contract, preserving the terms and conditions, and added additional funds. We also asked for a continued declaration of the sole source and delegate authority to the general manager. In 2014, we added funds for the BPON system upgrade. There's a breakdown of that spending. Since the original contract was put together, we spent $25.63 million, and since the extension, an additional $6.83 million, and there below there are the years that was spent. Why we want to continue as a sole source? First of all, the product has proven to be what we need here. It has excellent, that is, Nokia and Alcatel have provided excellent business and technical support over the years. We've also established expertise in those systems and operating and maintaining them. An alternative would require significant investments in logistics to maintain a new system, partly because you'd be running parallel systems. Mm-hmm. And finally, we keep the enhanced value for our customers through a standardized operation. And why we want to continue the contract extension, basically favorable terms and conditions. For example, pricing and payment terms. We right now have guaranteed most favored customer provisions, which means we have the lowest price for our size utility and any other utility of our size. There's a delivery of product terms, so we have freight on board for all of the equipment, which is very important to us. And we continue maintenance and support under flexibility of changes and additions as needed. The breakdown of the requested funds, we're looking again to add $9.12 million to the contract for a not to exceed amount of $38 million, and that is through 2022. The breakdown is basically through project budgets and through annual budgets. So under the project budget, we're looking at $5.12 million. That's comprised of support for the public power benefit expansion, our core system upgrades, our bandwidth management projects, and $1.77 million of miscellaneous capital projects. And through the annual process, we have $1 million for routine installations, $2 million for support contracts, and $1 million for routine maintenance and upgrades for a total of $4 million. Moving on to the next steps, we'd like to come back on December 18th, requesting board declaration of continued sole source, request board approval of resolution to extend the contract, serve favorable terms and conditions through December 31st, 2022. Adding $9.12 million to the Alcatel contract.
Questions?
Commissioner, questions?
I guess I have a comment and maybe a question. So I like the history, the background. That's always helpful because I can't seem to remember what happened when. But so, Bob, did you bring this to us because it's a sole source contract? Is that the primary reason that you brought it before the board?
Primarily to extend the terms to an additional five years and add the additional funds.
So it would have come before us anyway, even if it weren't a sole source. Anyway. Okay. I was just curious because I think we talked about that. We decided that just for the purpose of presenting a sole source contract that we didn't need to automatically do that anymore. Did we decide that?
No, we still are required to bring sole sources before the board for approval. This contract, Commissioner, was a contract that was originally executed back in 2003, and we continue to extend the terms of this contract as it is set to expire in order to capture those favorable terms and conditions. So this comes back periodically because we need board action to extend the agreement. Yeah, the alternative to the extension would be a new agreement with the same company under a same sole source type of declaration. And the disadvantage that we see is we already have good terms favorable that are working.
Yeah. But so you are still required, is that by
That's
by, is that by?
The delegation. State? Yeah, so the delegation resolution and the procurement statutes require board action for sole source.
For all sole source.
Correct.
We talked about that and said, can we change that?
There was a suggestion in the revised delegation resolution that that might be something that would be acceptable, but it does not appear in the final draft. That'll be presented to you next meeting.
Thank you.
Additional questions? Guess I've got one sort of a big picture question. I recognize that, you know, we would never want to have parallel systems, two different vendors, sort of like, you know, I've got an Apple phone and somebody else has a Samsung. How many viable vendors are there in the world of fiber optics today?
I think depending upon the day of the week, there are now three, possibly four. Calix is one, Nokia, Alcatel, and I'm trying to think of the third one.
Zone. They're no longer really viable.
There's issues. Different network providers have chosen some of these other vendors. We have certainly looked at those decisions. We have looked at those vendors. And the value to the district has been to stay with Nokia, Alcatel for the time being. Mm-hmm. Now, with that said, will that be true in 5 years or 10 years? We don't know. The disruption that's happening in the network space today is software-defined networking, where you put a generic, what we call a white box, and it's totally driven by software. So the functionality and the capability of that box is able to be set up and established by software-defined networking. When it will be at a feasible stage for us to evaluate it, as small as we are, is the question that's out there today. It is something we are looking at. It's something we will continue to look at. As to when do the conditions favor us and offer more benefit to change from this platform to another platform?
And that's when you always want to be ahead of the curve, but you never know where that curve is exactly going to land.
You don't want to be on the bleeding edge of it. So,
yeah, at either end.
Yeah.
Yeah, if this platform loses its viability, you know, how rapidly does that happen?
Right. Yeah.
Okay. So, super. Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you. And now, fiber update. I bet we have the same two people up there.
You do today. So this is a update that covers both 2017, what we've accomplished year to date, and also what we're going to accomplish in 2018. There is no action required today. So if I look at the 2017 accomplishments, I looked at them from the perspective of what does it mean to the customer? There's a lot of numbers on this page. What they really reflect are the things that make a difference to our customer owners and the end users of the service. They also represent a tremendous amount of focused work by not only our business unit, but also customer utilities. That's reflected in the number of connections. We're rapidly approaching 15,000 connections, which is a big milestone for us. We got 970 new connections in 2017, 697 of the regular installs, and 273 from the public power benefit expansion areas. Our take rate?
Good. So yes, that sir. 697 was in areas that we have been serving for some time.
What we call routine installs out of the existing service area. Our take rate is up to 45.4%, and we have a 77.2% equipment utilization rate. What that means is out of all the equipment that we have on the side of the houses, 77.2% has an active connection on it. That I'm going to show you some historical numbers here in just a minute. Probably the biggest number on this page is the network system composite uptime. That is a composite for all of our different networks, and we've achieved 100% year to date. I have to give a lot of credit to Bob, to the network administrators and the communications specialists, because it took a lot of focused work to get us from where we were last year to where we are this year. Our install time has come down to 12 days on average, and our maximum monthly bandwidth, the consumption of all the retail service providers, was 2.753 million gigabytes. That's a lot of data. So, kind of a historical snapshot on some of these numbers. If we look at connections, we've grown from a little over 12,000 to almost 15,000 in 5 years. Our take rate has climbed steadily. I will note that with the expansion, our take rate has the probability of coming down slightly because you're growing more and more premises past. But so far, that's held up. We're very pleased with it at this stage. The equipment utilization was a factor that was called out in Doug Dawson's evaluation of the district back in 2011-2012. I don't have that original number. What we do have is from 14 on, and we have improved that. We have different reasons why we change out the equipment on the houses, and in some cases we've had to go get equipment off houses that weren't using it so that we could install it for active customers due to the supply chain. It's grown from, or actually improved from 76% up to a little over 77%. The key figure for me when it comes to the customer owners is the average install date. We've reduced it from an average of 31 in 2012 down to 11 in 2017. So that's a big number for us. Yes, sir.
Mike, I have a question. Do you have numbers for the gigabyte maximum monthly bandwidth increase that encompasses 12 to current?
We could probably go back most of those years, yes, and provide you with that historical comparison.
My curiosity stems from increased video downloading and the demands, increased demands on bandwidth usage.
Right.
Today compared to 2012.
Right.
Yeah. So that's my interest, because I would assume the number has grown significantly.
It has grown significantly, but I also have to offer a caveat with that. That number is reflective both of the total traffic leaving our network and going to the retail service providers, but it is also influenced by things at the retail service providers. If they have a problem in their network and it's creating retransmits, that drives the number up. So we have to look at it and try to determine what's the real growth versus the growth that came out in the numbers, if you will. And in some cases, we know where the retail service provider has made a change, and in other cases, we don't. So we see some ups and downs in there, and we try to interpret that, but we're really looking for the big overall trend.
Do we have a maximum bandwidth capability based on the current equipment we have?
We have some maximums. It's going to vary, by retail service provider. It depends upon the network-to-network interface link to that service provider. In most cases, we keep a very close eye on that, and if they're starting to get up to the point that it would be customer-impacting, we are applying pressure to them that we need to do an upgrade, both on our end and their end, because it's a joint project. The other thing that we look at is the instantaneous speeds that are going through the network. Our maximum in 2017 was somewhere around 18 gigabits per second. So we have the fabric of the network. In the core of the network, we have the capability for about 120 gigabits total today. But getting it out of the core into the service provider is dependent upon the links that they've agreed to establish with us.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Randy?
Yes?
I'll jump in as long as you're stopped. Okay. So, Mike, what do you think is a realistic goal for take rate? You said you're pretty happy about the increasing take rate.
Mm-hmm.
What would be a realistic goal?
I'm going to touch on that just a little bit later,
Okay.
but the goal that I have set, we are going to ramp up a marketing program starting in 2018. I would like to be above 50% by the end of 2019.
There you go.
Incrementally, every 1% increase in take rate adds about $130,000 of annual revenue for the program. So there's obviously a very reasonable, very good ROI associated with the marketing program, and I'll get into that in just a few minutes.
And also, how do we compare to other districts, to Kitsap or Grant, or in terms of take rate? Maybe you want to touch on that later, too.
Well, I can touch on it right now since it's here on the screen. Actually, it was on the screen, but the Grant is very, very close to where we are. I believe they're at about 44%, but I don't know that number exactly. Grant did do a very good marketing program, and they ramped their take rate up from the low 30% into the low 40% in a very short period of time. So we really look at Grant and compare ourselves and what we're achieving. They have about the same amount of county coverage. And so when you look at the total number of premises passed, the percent of the county that they're covering, that's where we're looking for a valid comparison.
Mm-hmm. So, thank you.
Certainly.
And one final question before you get off of that slide right there. We've got a 77.2% equipment utilization, which says to me, if I interpret it correctly, we've probably got something over 3,000 homes with equipment on the home that, in essence, it would be flip a switch and they're on.
Correct.
Do our retail providers have access to that information?
Yes, they do.
Because, I mean, that's, you know, I call that the low-hanging fruit.
It's still the low-hanging fruit.
Yeah.
There are pros and cons to making an operational decision about removing that equipment. In the big picture, we prefer to leave it there and focus on that low-hanging fruit where we can. To go remove that equipment when we have to have it requires a truck roll, and it requires time from a technician alignment. If somebody else moves back in that house, then we're talking another truck roll to go back and a delay in getting them in service. So even if it's an older 100 megabit capable ONT, I believe that we're better off leaving it because they can be turned on very quickly. May still have to go out and upgrade the ONT to get them gigabit if they want it, but it's an opportunity to get them in service quicker. Thank you. Good question. Public power benefit accomplishments. it was a good year for us, a very good year. We had to make some changes and adapt throughout the year. We work very, very closely with our counterparts and customer utilities, and we have common objectives. They have a lot of reliability projects that they're working on, and we try to coordinate, work hand-in-hand with them, and make sure that the path we choose is aimed at achieving the objectives for both business units. We use a lot of tools in coordinating with the customer utilities. We have joint planning. We have an examination of workload and objectives, primary or priority objectives for both of us. So our tools range from the projects that we do totally with our internal resources. Some of them we do partially with contractors, and we have some that we've done totally with contractors. And the end result, the end objective for both of us is to get the service out to the customers, but to do it in a very smart way. It's the easiest way I know to say it. In 2017, we passed 1,068 new premises. So the total for the PPB since inception is 1,798. We currently have reached 73% of the county. We got 273 new connections in PPB areas. We don't feel that that's coming quite as fast as we would like for it to come, and so that's another impetus behind the marketing program. In 2017, we did install in Mary Canyon, Granite Ridge, Yaxham Canyon, Manson, Riverside 9, Mission Creek, and Brinder Canyon. We also did a lot of infill areas, Sunny Slope, Chelan, and Cashmere, and we accomplished the preliminary design for 2018.
Where's Granite Ridge?
I'm going to look to Bob on Granite Ridge.
It's in the Chelan area.
That's in Chelan.
Yeah.
Mike, before you move on, the 73% of the county coverage, historically that number has floated. I'm assuming this is a bankable number.
That is a bankable number. I have to say that with quote sure. marks, and here's why. As I add a 1,000 connections, a little over 1,000 in 2017, mm-hmm. the other piece of that is, where is the growth in the county? The county is growing faster than in the past. And so if that growth is where I have fiber, it helps me on my percent covered. If it's not where I have fiber, it hurts me on the percent covered. So that's something that we look at very closely.
What's the churn rate?
The current churn rate is in the 2% range.
Oh, that's cool.
Actually, I think that's very high, and I don't like it. The issue
I like that, your standards.
The issue that we have with the churn rate is, up until we started the PPP, we were competing with one hand tied behind our back. We would lose a customer because they would move to an area where we were not at. More importantly, we were also losing the house that they moved out of that was on fiber. And so that, again, goes A, to the marketing, but B, it goes to getting the retail service providers aggressively going after the moves. The big companies, the nationwide cable companies, cooperate together so that if somebody moves from Dallas to Wenatchee, even though Comcast is not in Wenatchee, when they know they're losing that customer, they will notify Charter that customer's coming. Many times they've already signed up for internet service before they even come down here and sign up for electrical service.
Hmm.
So, yes, we would like to get that number down.
Thank you.
So is that 2% on an annualized basis? Or
annualized.
Okay.
Yes. We did a customer survey in 2017, and the purpose behind the study was to evaluate customers' attitudes, awareness, and perceptions about fiber service in their area. This was the first survey that we've done in a long, long time, and we learned a lot from it. We also learned that as we do future surveys, we need to focus them a little bit differently. Two of our big questions: if fiber was available, were they signed up? And if so, were they happy with their service? And if not, why? If fiber was coming to their area, were they going to sign up? Our key findings out of this survey is the most common reason for not signing up was non-awareness of availability. Only 1 in 9 reported having heard or seen any promotions from Chelan Fiber in the past 30 days, and the date of that survey was mid-July. The majority of those without internet service, 55% of them, and the ones without internet service composed about a little over 15% of the total that were surveyed, 62 of the 405, reported they simply did not need it. So that, to me, is kind of in average with the big picture, that about 8 to 10% of the citizens still say they do not need internet service. The good news is that 90% of the people feel that they do need it, and we expect to see them signing up as we expand into their area. 80%, 4 out of 5 internet customers did rate their satisfaction above the midpoint on the satisfaction scale. The reason that we're not being more precise about that is, when you ask about customer satisfaction, it's hard to differentiate between the satisfaction with our service versus the satisfaction with the retail service provider service. So we want to kind of fine-tune that in future surveys. So then we're going to move on to 2018. It's going to be another big year for us. We have a lot of fiber projects, telecom projects, the fiber marketing plan. We're working very intensely on the asset management strategy. We also have the public power benefit. And again, we collaborate strongly with customer utilities for that. Our network projects, we're upgrading our optical line terminals for managing existing OLT end of life and adding some enhancements to it. We're doing a bandwidth management project, which is actually phase one of a network re-architecture. We are enhancing the capacity in the core and the high-speed optics for the links between the core and the nodes. We're implementing the Service Portal Express implementation, which gives us greater management and alarm capabilities within the network. It improves that network monitoring and reporting, and it therefore improves customer service. Our network-to-network interface upgrades provide higher capacity, redundancy, and resiliency for service providers. Those are all joint projects, and the retail service providers have to decide to make their investment to provide those same functions.
Mike, do we have a statistic in terms of reliability? You know, what percentage of the time are we up and available to the customers?
The network composite system uptime measures that. It measures it for the core of the network, both the core out to the nodes. We have some information related to individual customer issues. Our problem, again, there is being able to delineate whether it was something in our network or the service provider's network. And so we're still attempting to refine that to get a better picture of it. Our asset management strategy for 2018 is to continue to build the framework and hierarchy. We have three major asset families. We have the passive stuff, the physical stuff, the fiber cable connectors and passive devices. We have what we call common assets that are very common with the rest of the districts, both vehicles, computers, and software. And then we have our active network electronics. The active electronics are managed through the long-range technology plan. This plan is looking out 8 to 10 years, and it's analyzing the physical, functional, and vendor-driven obsolescence cycle. But we're focused on obtaining maximum value from the investments while managing the network for both capacity, functionality, reliability, and resilience. Those are the four big issues for any network. I will plan on coming back sometime in early 2018 and giving you an update specifically on the long-range technology plan. This is actually the strategy that drives our decision-making for investments in the future, just like the software-defined networking that we talked about earlier. When do we think we're going to have to move to that? When is it advantageous for us to move to that? So I will come back in 18 to do that presentation. Telecom projects, we have the microwave network implementation, which should be through by the end of 18. We're starting on the implementation of the new digital mobile radio system. In conjunction with both of those, we're implementing a fault management system. It provides the status alarms, all the environmental conditions, intrusion detection, and the power conditions at those remote sites. And then we have our fiber marketing program. It's a very, very short clip, and there's no sound. We are doing the promotion for the 15,000th customer. And so everybody that signs up between now and December 13th is eligible to be in a drawing for an iPad, and that's kind of kicking off the marketing program for 2018. We also are going to do radio ads, direct mail, increase social media strategies and e-campaigns, the customer relations staff offering fiber services during routine customer calls, print ads, movie theater ads, We are focusing on being bilingual, and our target audience is the heart of the internet culture, ages 25 to 55. Public Power Benefit Program for 2018. In the budget that you we anticipate being approved this afternoon, the expansion areas that are included in there are the Chumstick Highway, Mary Canyon area, completion of the Brender Canyon and Manson Boulevard areas, with infill in Cashmere, Chelan, and Plain. There are 814 new premises for 2018. We also carried over 245 from 2017. Those are some of the adjustments that we made. A big one is Brender Canyon. We would like to have had it lit up by the end of this year. Due to some other priorities and work processes, it won't happen until early next year. So we've got 245 that we originally said would be in 17 that are sliding over a little bit. So the total number of 2018 premises expected is 1,059. So now I'm going to summarize what I've just said. The broadband network was stable and reliable in 2017. We're approaching the 15,000th active connection. We did pass the 1,068 new premises and nearly 1,800 total under the PPB. We're going to add another 1,059 in 2018. We're going to launch a marketing program. And we're going to continue to work on programs that and projects to improve or upgrade our fiber and telecom assets.
Questions?
Not a question, just a comment. I shared with Bob an email a couple of weeks ago outside our residence appeared our fiber crew doing an install, and it was really a moment of pride to look at the equipment, the new splicing trailer, to talk with the gentlemen doing the work, their enthusiasm about the work that they were performing and it being good work, and the support that they feel that they're receiving of the public power benefit and, you know, other things. And to a certain extent, knowing where the program was at one point and where it is, I just want to compliment the leadership and the attitude of the crews, looking at the equipment and the opportunities they have and what's being provided by the public. It was just, it was a really good moment. And there's a lot that has happened and a lot of really good things and much appreciation for what's transpiring. And I'd just like us to keep our foot on the pedal and keep moving it forward and the quality in which it's being done. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. We certainly appreciate that comment, and we're going to pass it on to the entire business unit. I'm going to do this presentation for the business unit upcoming next week as part of an annual update. And we very much appreciate, because that's where the rubber meets the road, and the folks that are out there every day meeting the public, delivering the services for the public, are really the heart of the organization.
Yeah, they're great ambassadors. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it was good.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Any other questions or comments? Just like to be a little bit philosophical and think back several years ago to the challenges that fiber faced, but also think about the last 10 years, the changing landscape of the view of fiber as a needed utility in our modern world. And I think the last 10 years have had a huge impact on our ability to move forward, and you guys are embracing that. But today we actually had a PUD Association meeting this last week. One of the presenters was talking about broadband, and he's actually asked me, and I'll talk with Chad Rissman at some moment in time, because I will never forget during the fires at Lake Chelan a couple of years ago, Chad coming in and making a statement to this board that at this moment in time, it was now an open question, which was the more highly needed public utility, electricity or fiber optics. And that was a powerful statement about the change that's occurring right before our eyes. We're in the process of managing that. So what you guys are doing for the residents in Chelan County is a really powerful statement about what this county is going to be like 10, 15, 20 years down the road.
Yeah.
It's important.
And I can't help but reflect on when you and Randy and myself were at the Squirrel Tree restaurant meeting with customers and never really having a lot of good feelings about that we were going to get out of there alive. So it's in a much different position.
I remember that meeting.
So do we. Trust us. Okay, thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, by the way, the happiest person on the crew is the splicer. Because he loves that trailer.
Does he have heat inside?
He does. Yeah, it's hard to splice 32 pieces of fiber when your hands are frozen, so it's well-received.
So, commissioners, the next two presentations are budget and debt planning. We could, if we chose at the end of those presentations, take action on those at that moment in time rather than letting them wait till after lunch, if we have that time and if we want to do that. So just thought I would share that with you as we start.
Commissioner McKenna, are you still on the line? Oh, we're okay.
Yes, I am. I have to bear with me because I have to step up and hit my mute button on.
No, that's okay. We had a couple commissioners step out. I just want to make sure we still had three of them.
And so anytime you want to participate, just make sure you click that off. And I haven't been calling on you, but I know you're there. So
thank you very much.
You bet. So
I have questions. I'll unmute and ask.
All right. Sounds great.
Thank you.
So, item six, our proposed budget.
I invite Craig Kuntz up.
Good morning, commissioners. I'm Craig Kuntz, Senior Strategic Financial Planning Analyst, here to discuss the 2018 proposed budget. And I was going to state we'll be requesting approval for the 2018 budget this afternoon by a formal resolution, but that's based on your comment, Commissioner. That's your choice if you would like to proceed after this presentation. You will see there's no material changes from the November 20th public hearing other than some rounding of figures for presentation purposes. And this is really an opportunity for further questions or comments before the presentation of the resolution. Our focus during the budget process has been on increasing long-term value for our customer owners. The budget was built on strategic initiatives and business plans that were presented to the board on October 2nd. Reinvesting in people is the district's highest priority, assets and people. You've been communicated there are significant investments in our assets, particularly at the hydros proposed in the 2018 budget. Other priorities include debt reduction. We are reducing debt by $24 million in 2018 and the continuation of the public power benefit. There is no 2018 planned electric retail rate increase in the 2018 budget. Looking at our combined financial business results, the 2018 budget bottom line is nearly $72 million. At the business planning, it was just north of $70 million. So there's been a slight improvement between the business planning and what we're proposing for the 2018 budget. Looking at the combined district expenditures, the total expenditures are budgeted. Planned budget is nearly $343 million for 2018. And taking into consideration net debt reduction, the total expenditures is just above $366 million. The district's financial policies, as well as the individual business line financial policies for 2018 and the five-year window, are all on track. We will continue to monitor the integrated electric test metrics going forward. And again, we'll either be back this afternoon or you can act as your discretion, requesting formal approval of the 2018 budget per resolution. And I'm going to open it up for our questions or comments at this time.
Commissioners, questions, comments?
Commissioner, I want to note one thing in particular. This proposed budget is the largest capital budget that the district has undertaken. We measure back to 2000. I would guess it's the largest since the construction of the dams. And it's going to be a really challenging year for us to get all this work done. We're convinced that it's consistent with the strategic plan in terms of investing in assets that will create long-term value. It's in large part a result of the fact that we have been doing all this asset management work and understanding the state of our assets, and that we're looking at new ways to be able to create value for customers. But I do want to make sure that it's acknowledged up front. This is going to be a tough year for us, tough in terms of the trying to get the work done with the workforce that we've got. We're going to be stretching in terms of using contractors and trying to accomplish a pretty darn big program.
And just a brief explanation to media, not that they probably need it, but it's been an exhaustive process going through the budget. Today as just a short summary and update. So we're not capricious and arbitrary in terms of adopting this. It's been a long path and well done.
Yeah, this is the end of 2 months of every board meeting discussing budgets from a long-term perspective down to 2018.
So today's a good day.
Yeah, an important day, very important. So before we, if there's no other questions, we could go to item seven then on the debt planning. Is that?
Yes, I think
yeah,
it would be.
Right there.
Do you want to wait till this afternoon to do the adoption?
Well, let's go through this and talk. Maybe we could talk about both of them at the end. We may have.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah. Because debt planning adopted as part of the budget, the 2018 component, we think it would be worthwhile to do both
before
trying to move to the resolution.
Thank you.
So, yep. Next up.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner
Litchfield.
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Debbie Litchfield, Treasurer for the District, and I am here today as a follow-up to the discussion that we had at the last meeting with the Board of Commissioners to discuss the financial strategy sessions and debt policy guidelines. The information that you're going to see in this presentation is the same as what we presented last time with just some summarized information. Just to anchor back to the activities that we've been working on through the course of this year, we started with our financial strategy plan that we started with looking at the district-wide debt policies, completed that, then went into the business line policies, completed a portion of that for the water, wastewater, and fiber, and then agreed on to do some monitoring for the integrated electric. And so then the focus of this conversation really came down to looking at the debt policies in the next level, so that's where we're at. In addition to this, we do anticipate to come back Q1 of 2018 to talk about the revenue policies and the next steps, and we'll have a little bit of conversation about that through some of the slides you'll see here in just a moment. So today, what we are looking for from you is the affirmation or head nod of the things that we have discussed at the November 20th meeting, which we discussed the debt philosophy and the planning strategies. We talked about what had changed from the last board strategy session and also the 2016-2017 plan of finance activities. We introduced the 2018 operational plan of finance and also the hydro funding tools and updated guidelines. So today what we're seeking from the board is affirmation on the debt planning modifications and ongoing long-term debt planning strategies. So just to summarize again what the debt planning modifications were, we presented being able to scale back on some of the early debt retirements while still achieving the debt ratio of less than 35% in 2019. We are still anticipating to do some debt retirement, but scale back the early retirements. We anticipate to implement certain debt payments 6 months in advance for some cost savings and also improvement to our debt service coverage. And for planning purposes, we assume to borrow for our electric modernization expansion capital and continue to fund electric replacement capital through revenues. We also expect to utilize the debt reduction charge and the capital recovery charge funding that is part of the plus components of long-term power sales contracts for the hydros to the extent that those are available. And should those not be sufficient, we would look to create debt obligations for the hydros either through internal loans of unrestricted funds or in the external borrowing market. We continue ongoing debt planning review to ensure that we've got the right balance with liquidity and leverage, as well as looking at our other financial metrics. And again, no change on this page as well, but this to discuss a little bit about the 2018 operational plan of finance that was presented at the last meeting. The 2018 detailed actions are what's included in the 2018 budget that you will be looking to discuss approval of shortly. And that does include the $24 million of debt reduction for this year. And then for the 2019 through 2027, those plans are included in our forecasting as we go forward. So incorporating in the debt strategies that we've discussed, and this also includes the proposed facilities plan, our financial policies are on track. Again, this has not changed from the last time that this was presented. But we're seeing that in 2019, we're actually achieving a debt ratio target of about 32%, and that we are starting to see borrowing on the horizon to meet liquidity out in the 2022 timeframe. So incorporating in those debt modification summaries into our debt planning strategies, we've highlighted in blue the areas that we were discussed during the November meeting, and we'll be incorporating in here. And again, just to touch briefly on these, that we would be maintaining liquidity at greater than $175 million, seeking to achieve the less than 35% by 2019 for the debt leverage. We would continue ongoing debt plan review to ensure we've got the right balance between liquidity and leverage. We would continue to manage to the lowest interest. And for planning purposes, assume borrowing for the electric modernization and expansion capital and continue to fund the replacement capital through the electric revenues. We would utilize the DRC-CRC funding to the extent available and then otherwise provide debt obligations. And then we'd look to borrow for long-term sustainability on a 2 to 3 year interval basis for cost efficiencies and monitoring our refinancing opportunities continually. So again, the information that I've just shared with you is just a summary and reaffirmation of the items that were discussed at the November 20th meeting. So what we're seeking from the board today is affirmation of your support for the debt planning modifications, the ongoing long-term debt strategies, and then in conjunction with the budget approval, the 2018 operational plan of finance. Any questions?
Might make a, a comment. I really like your presentation, and the rationale is, I think, solid. One of the big fundamental changes that's occurred this year in the last few months, if you put it in layman's terms, we looked out 5 years, saw we're going to be spending more on asset management and have a greater need for capital expenditures than we anticipated when we started our debt reduction and decided not to stop the debt reduction but to slow it down so we don't have to borrow any sooner.
Correct. I mean, that's exactly correct.
Yeah, and I think that the layman really gathers that in. But you've got all the metrics that we've established. We're meeting them. That's exciting. It's neat that we can continue to pay down debt, meet those metrics, while at the same time meet the increased financial needs of the district.
Correct. Thank you.
And I would add to that that we also are taking into account that we see the decline in the wholesale market.
That's a big item. Well. It's a very big item.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
As soon as Dennis steps back in, we can talk about this a little bit. You're going to have some manager items?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
And we might even be able to get to one or two of the resolutions for the afternoon if you would like.
Okay.
We're going to have a busy afternoon.
Yeah, I think so.
Would you like to take a manager item now?
Sure.
Lorna Klemanski, Managing Director, Human Resources, Labor, and Safety. And I'm just here to tell you about our third annual Discover Us program that we're going to be doing next week for helping members of the Hispanic community understand what it takes to be successful both in our selection processes and in as an employee. And we had a very comprehensive Spanish language media campaign, including radio spots, print media, social media, did grassroots door-to-door passing out postcards and posters in Dryden, Eniat, Chelan, Leavenworth, Peshastin, Kashmir, Wenatchee, and East Wenatchee. And everywhere we've gotten really good feedback about people being excited about this program. So look forward to it. And we have each of the 2 years, we have hired someone who claims that the reason they were successful in being hired was because of the Discover Us program. So
great.
I think it's doing some good.
Super. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to invite John Stoll up to do another one of our manager items.
Good morning, Commissioners. John Stoll, Managing Director of Customer Utilities. Wanted to spend just a couple minutes and talk about load growth. I know we've had conversations over, for a couple years, even talking about substations and load growth. And then as our business plan in support of the budget, we looked at resources required to kind of help support some of that load growth as well. But I want to give you an update just kind of where we're at. We're in a pretty dynamic period. We've talked about we expect our load growth that we're hooking up, net of conservation, increase over historical patterns. But right now we're in a really interesting time. The Bitcoin price, which seems to be driving some of the most recent inquiries we're having in applications. It was interesting. I looked at the price a year ago. It was $760 a Bitcoin. Today it's $11,300. Yeah. China has done some things with their exchanges, putting limits and controls, and that has, I think, created a new market for other areas where people are looking to, get into cryptocurrency, HDL type loads. So we're getting lots of people knocking on our doors. Just as a good example, I ask staff, and it seems like every time I go to somebody's office, they're on the phone call with somebody wanting to know, boy, we'd sure like a lot of power to do some Bitcoin mining. So we've had over, I think, 20 phone calls over the past couple of weeks. Multiple emails. Interesting enough, Bob Bauer called me this morning and said I had somebody wanted to come do a tour of the visitor center, even though we're closed. And when he called them back, it was, well, they're out of the Bay Area and they'd really like to come up to explore Bitcoin mining operations. So can you chat with them? Locally, I believe Grant County has had quite a bit of applications as well, and large load, new load that has kind of put them in, I don't know if they're in a moratorium, but I think they're in a spot where they're not able to process applications or it's taking a lot longer to do so.
Let me just say, I spoke with Grant last week and they're very clear that they're not in a moratorium. They are, they need to better understand the impacts on their system before they are able to respond. So they're doing a process to respond as they're capable based on their system.
So we see activity in a number of fronts. We might have very large load requests, applicants coming in seeking hundreds of megawatts, which is just, kind of the initial conversation versus applicants who are in small commercial businesses to even what we're seeing in the residential area. We have a process where if we notice a high bill or a high read that seems pretty out of the norm, we do a process to put a different meter on, talk to the customers, try and understand what's going on. I think right now in the past week there were 5 of those that were uncovered. And then that triggers, a review and to try and see what's going on. Ultimately, directing them to put it in an application, but it's certainly consuming a lot of staff time. And again, with the price of bitcoins and things that are going on, it just is pretty prevalent right now.
John, can you describe how it is that staff is able to locate a particular high read and maybe how long it takes to uncover that?
Yeah, it starts with the meter read, a physical read or a drive-by read that triggers. It's out of a parameter that's been set. So somebody looks at that initially, and if somebody normally uses 2,000 kilowatt hours in a month and all of a sudden they're using 10,000 kilowatt hours, that, is it a misread? Is it something of that nature? So that starts the process. I think sometimes we'll find out right away that, I've got some Bitcoin mining machines, or that's something else. Maybe we don't get quite the information we need. So then we would go out and we would set what we call a load logging meter. So it's a truck roll. It's somebody goes out, installs the meter, and then we'll come back on a periodic basis and download the information. So you see the profile. And as I talked 2 weeks ago with around the AMI system, that's the type of technology that you would have at your fingertips versus a manual process to go out, get the information, and come back and understand what it is.
And that's actually the source of my question is, with the current technology that we have, it takes time.
Correct.
Yeah. Roughly how much?
Sometimes it could be a month.
A month.
Yeah, to get that data back.
And this is all driven by perhaps a ratepayer who hasn't told us that they've increased their load.
Correct.
Through Bitcoin mining or anything like that.
One of the large applicants actually had a comment. I think they shared it with Lindsay last week. It's, you're open for business because you've got that high density load rate, things of that nature. So, it's just interesting. We went through a lot of process a couple of years ago, put in that rate, but definitely with the price of bitcoins and what that rate is, it's very attractive. Our challenge is capacity. Just like what we've talked about in the Chelan, Leavenworth area, we're using up what Chad calls our freeboard in our system as we see load growth, whether it be cryptocurrency or even what we're seeing with tourism, housing, apartments, things of that nature. And kind of close this out, talking to Steve, we've identified that the load growth issue is pretty significant, that we'd like to set up a quarterly update, a little more background information, more details, so you can see what's going on. What do we have from everything that growth is, loads that have been connected, to people that are in the application queue, to, even the tire kickers that are coming around, just so there's an awareness of what's going on. But it's pretty significant right now.
I'll share with you that I read that Venezuela, which has been having trouble with their currency for a number of years now, and it's been in free fall, is announced they are investigating switching from paper currency to cryptocurrency. So should that happen, you have the first government that would be embracing some type of cryptocurrency.
Interesting.
Not sure what that means. Just think about a government in free fall and doing that.
Our staff's pretty busy with the current inquiries, and it's interesting. In fact, when I talked to Bob Bauer this morning, and I said, well, could you just send me the email? So he sent it to me. He said, could you just deal with this? So I sent it to Lindsay, who goes, well, we've already got multiple emails coming in because people are just, they're really eager to talk and understand and, set up shop if they can.
John, what's the response been to our program, our proposal, or our prices, I guess. I mean, our rates.
Our rates. I don't think it's been all that negative. I'm sure the upfront charge people have to work through, but it's not stopping people from submitting the application and going forward. Our biggest challenge is a lot of these areas where they're, asking for a service, we're constrained from a capacity standpoint. So naturally, it begs the question, well, where can I go where you have capacity? But that, that's not really our role to do that. It's what,
yeah, because others have large upfront charges as well.
I think you're seeing more of that
Douglas County does. Yeah, I don't know about Grant.
I think they recently changed something.
I think Grant's looking at it.
Yeah.
Based on conversation.
And we may well find ourselves in a similar position where, as Grant, where we have to say, there's so many of you coming at us, we have to figure out the infrastructure that would be required to support that. No, we're not to that point yet, but you know, it just depends on how many of these folks keep coming through the door. And $10,000 Bitcoin prices seems to be increasing the number of people who are getting on planes and flying to Wenatchee these days.
Yeah, so you know, I kind of looked at my tally of inquiries, and over 2 weeks through different various channels, there's about 50 that have come in. And that takes each one of those is staff time and responses, and that's just the initial conversations.
Wow. Well, this comes at a good time. We're working on, of course, identifying where we have assets that are underutilized throughout the county. I haven't heard a final on that, so I think that project's still underway. Mm-hmm. Arriving at an answer where we've identified what assets are available in the county and being underutilized might help answer the question that you just posed, John. And of course,
we're also looking at assets that are overutilized and creating a challenge for us in terms of infrastructure investment needs, too. So we've got both sides going on.
One of the head scratchers is what's going on in the residential area because those services aren't designed for that. And when you just, you know, there's no load diversity or you lose that diversity, so everything is on all the time. You know, that's a challenge.
So maybe we could circle back to the item 6 and 7 that we, now that we're all back here, would you like to go ahead and take action on those items? I think it's a big moment to pass the budget every year. It's the once a year. It provides the template for our entire utility moving forward. It's a big budget this year. Huge. As you said, you're going to be challenged with especially the capital side, managing your way through that.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to make the motion for approval. Dennis, you were out of the room. Did you hear the discussion on the debt?
Yes.
Which is a part of this? You did?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So any objection then by Dennis?
So the motion has been made to approve.
I'll go ahead and make the motion. You want me to do that? Yeah, I will move resolution number 12 approving. Move approval of resolution number 12, approving the 2018 district budgets for the fiber network, water, wastewater, and integrated electric, including distribution, transmission, Columbia River Rock Island Hydroelectric, Lake Chelan Hydroelectric, Rocky Reach Hydroelectric Systems, internal service system, and financing facilities, business lines.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the 2018 budget, which is resolution number 12. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Aye. I heard you, Commissioner McKenna. Thank you. It's been passed unanimously. Opposed? I'll make sure. It's been passed unanimously. Thank you.
I would like to take 1 second just to acknowledge Kelly Boyd, who has led our internal effort to put this budget together. So what you've seen is the last 2 month process, but our process on the budget actually starts in February when we have a senior management team strategic planning review. We develop the 5-year business plans. So there's a lot of work that goes on internally to develop this, and I just think she's done a marvelous job of leading us through and helping us stay focused on thinking long term, but also making the decisions that need to be made in order to be able to bring you a 2018 budget.
Thank you, Kelly.
Thanks, Kelly.
Thank you.
And Craig, it's been good to see you, but just not so often for a while, okay? You bet. Yeah, appreciate all the work.
Commissioners, I'd like to suggest that we have, we're ahead of schedule. We have some resolutions that we were planning for the afternoon that we'd be able to bring forward this morning if you're ready to do so.
Certainly. Would it be out of line for us to approve the consent agenda at this time also?
I'm sorry. I should have done that. Yes. Thank you.
And then the I-937 has to be at 1 o'clock. That's a public hearing.
Correct.
Okay. Very good. So, commissioners, our consent agenda was modified a little bit earlier to include resolutions 13, 14, 15, and 17.
Would there be a motion to approve the consent agenda, including those four?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we accept the consent agenda as modified.
Second.
Been moved and seconded to accept the consent agenda with the inclusion of those four resolutions. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Steve.
Opposed? The motion is carried. Okay. So I think we have item resolution 16, 18, and 19. Is that correct?
That's correct. And I'm going to do a little bit out of order just based on staff availability.
Okay.
So we'd like to move to item 18. A resolution accepting the bid of Palm Builders Incorporated of Davenport, Washington, bid 17-53 to provide construction of the Rike Island Storage Building. Dan Frazier will present.
Good morning, Commissioners.
Good morning.
I was getting ready to say this. Good afternoon, but I'm coming on early. I like that. So today it's my honor to recommend approval of a bid that we received from Home Builders. This is the first piece of this strategic facilities plan we've been working on for a couple years at least now. This actual piece was one that existed as a need prior to the start of the facilities plan, but after we started the work into the study, we altered the scope of the project and brought it much larger and a much more compliant building to what we need long term. So this is a 20,000 square foot building. We opened bids on November 2nd, received five bids, one alternate. The low responsive bid was from Home Builders from Davenport, Washington, in the amount of $3,425,000. Is about $875,000 below our engineer's estimate, so it was a very good bid, great bidding climate. This time of year generally is good for bidding work that can be done the following construction season, so we're definitely a beneficiary of that bidding climate at this point. The Home Builders uniquely qualified to do this kind of work. They've done this exact type of work for other public agencies in our area. They've done for the Port of Douglas County. They did work for the other counties. So definitely a contractor we've worked with in the past. They actually worked on part of Pybus Market. They did the entryway off of the foot of Arondo Street. So definitely known quantity for us.
Did they do the one of the restrooms up at BB? Not BB, but Daroga.
I know we've worked with them. I don't know about that specific project.
But. Yeah, I just remember the contractor I thought was from Davenport, and
there can't be many in Davenport.
they actually did. It's on their website.
Okay.
Great. Yeah. So definitely an own builder, and we actually had some really good discussions with him during bid evaluation. Got a lot of comfort with how they're going to approach this project. So. We are going to continue to look at ways of further cost reduction, but only with the ability to achieve all of our project goals. This is, like I said, the first piece of the project. We're trying to set up how we're going to move forward for the rest of the project. And actually, the reason I'm here today is the rest of the team is down meeting with architects and engineers on the Rock Island project today. So I don't have Sam up here as I normally do. But the contractor would start work in February and at this point would be complete at the end of June. Again, these type of projects always have a weather component. Pouring concrete in the extreme cold can be costly, so we want to avoid any of those type of costs.
Again, that was going to be my question. So it'll be a concrete building compared to prefab sections compared to a steel building.
Yeah, they're anticipating, well, so the alternates that we provided the opportunity to bid on were steel buildings. We didn't get one that was cheaper than this concrete building, but we are going to entertain that option with the contractor to see if there can be some cost savings with the steel building. But what they have proposed is called a tilt-up design, so they would pour it in place and tilt it up. Right. We did have a bid from a precaster that would have had to redesign the walls so they could be transported, but they would do a precast design.
Thank you.
Any further questions?
None from me. Thank you. Yeah,
thank you.
Okay, I'd like to move to item 16, a resolution authorizing the general manager to execute individual task authorizations under interagency agreement SA number 15-123 with Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife to operate the fish hatchery programs required in the licenses for the Rocky Reach, Rock Island, and Lake Chelan. Underwood's going to lead us here today.
Thank you. Good morning, commissioners. So my name is Lynn Underwood, manager of Fish and Wildlife. And as Steve mentioned, we're here to talk about the DFW task authorization today. And with me is Ian Adams, our hatchery maintenance operations coordinator. And he will be presenting the resolution.
Good morning, commissioners. As Lynn said, my name is Ian Adams. I'm the hatchery maintenance operations coordinator for the district. Today we're here to request authorization to execute 2018 task authorizations for the individual task authorizations for hatchery operations. These are in not to exceed task authorizations for the 15-123 master agreement we have with Department of Fish and Wildlife that was executed in January of 2016. These task authorizations take care of or cover all of the work that's required to meet the district's current agreement for operations. I'm sorry, I lost track. Where am I here? The operations include all activities required to meet the annual production requirements, including adult collection, spawning, incubation, rearing, transferring, and final rearing and acclimation for release. The current agreements will expire December 31st of 2017. The agreements with DFW provide for annual reviews of the budgets and tasks to be performed to ensure compliance with FERC obligations and continued cost effectiveness. The district is billed for annual accrual or annual costs only. District staff also review all invoices before any payments are made. The total cost for hatchery operations in 2018 will not exceed $3,053,933. This is a 2.3% increase over the annual budget in 2017. This is a modest 2018 budget increase. There are largely due to the following: state authorized 2% cost of living allocations, and that's for all staff. It goes into effect July 1st, 2018. And union negotiated 5% salary increases for some of the positions that are in addition to the 2% DFW COLA. The indirect overhead rate increase of 4.23% from last year to 32.46%. The state indirect rate is established by the Department of the Interior. Federal regulation and state RCWs require that entities contracting with DFW pay the full approved indirect rate. And it's worth mentioning that we had some significant concerns with the large increase of this indirect rate for 2018 and approached DFW with our concerns. DFW has said that they have just completed developing a new policy that standardizes across the agency the formula for calculating the indirect rate. This is expected to result in a more levelized rate next year, closer to the 28.5% norm. Because of the increases I just described, DFW's first draft of 2018 operational budgets proposed an increase of 7.8% over 2017. However, the budgets we're proposing today actually hold DFW to only 2.3% increase. And this was accomplished by developing a new methodology for budgeting for individual staff positions based on actual rates. In particular, individuals that were paid a, excuse me, the past method for budgeting took the max potential pay for each DFW staff member and budgeted based on that. We've ratcheted that back to what the actual pay is, and that's how we conserve quite a bit of money on these budgets for 2018. It's also important to note that a portion of these costs, estimated at roughly $529,430, which is approximately 17% of the budget request, will be paid for by Grant PUD under the hatchery sharing agreement between Chelan and Grant that was executed in 2011. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to take those now.
Commissioners, questions?
It's just good work on, kind of holding their feet to the fire, though, in terms of the increases and monitoring that closely. Good work.
Thank you. Right. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks.
We may be able to fit one more in, but we don't have the right staff in the room at the moment. So what we'd like to do is we do have the issue with respect to the January board meetings. We had discussed before that the schedule right now calls for us to meet on January 2nd and the 15th, which are difficult days for us to be able to have effective meetings, particularly the 2nd because of the challenge in terms of preparing materials in the week between Christmas and New Year's to meet with you the day after New Year's. So we put a proposal on the table to meet on the 8th and the 22nd instead, take advantage of the fact that it's a 5-Monday month, and that will just put us back on schedule after that for the regularly scheduled meetings.
Oh. Bringing up my calendar, I think I have scheduled to be gone based on the 2nd and 9th and the 15th. I will be on the 22nd.
I think all of us have that same problem, and we have had an intervening conversation that potentially the 22nd can, I don't know how many members can call in.
There's not a limit in the governance policies for phone attendance. And
so the 22nd could be a very short meeting to conduct needed business.
I'm also scheduled to be out and unavailable on the 22nd.
As am I.
As am I.
There's four of us.
But I could call in, but they will not be in the valley.
I'll be available. This is Steve.
You got the meeting there. It's all you, Steve.
It's all yours, buddy. Way to go.
So I think our thinking is that it's going to be very difficult to have an effective meeting on the 2nd.
Canada. Right.
So the real choice here is whether to cancel the 2nd and just leave the 15th or to go ahead and move to the 8th and then be able to, we would certainly try to focus more on resolutions that have to be passed on the 22nd just to be able to keep business moving and then be able to do that with the majority of you on by phone. I think our recommendation would be that latter alternative in terms of trying to keep business moving here. But we could we can go the other way.
That's fine with me. Whatever I think, whatever works best for you and staff.
Yeah,
and I can call in.
So and so could I. 8th and the 22nd, assuming that it's going to be a very lightly attended boardroom on the 22nd.
Mm-hmm. What does the 29th look like? Is that too late?
The problem is then you're into a meeting on the 29th and then a meeting on the following week, so it just gets to be
okay
packed up there.
Steve, what's your feeling of perhaps moving the 2nd to later in the week, even Friday the 5th, and leaving the 15th alone? Would that be possible?
It's possible. The difficulty is there's a fair amount of staff work that goes into preparing for a meeting. And so we usually start on the Monday prior to a board meeting to begin to put the materials together. So what we'd be trying to do is really pack it into a very few days and then the difficulty then becomes providing public notice. So our ability to be able to post materials in advance of the meeting, we would be challenged to be able to do anything useful at that meeting.
So will we have a quorum in terms of, call? If I can call in, and who else could, you could call in, and Steve will be here. Yeah, so we will have a quorum.
I think the 22nd we could all be there via phone.
Okay. Well, I'll make the motion then.
Okay.
So I move that we reschedule our January 2018 regular board meetings as follows. Number one, move to reschedule the Tuesday, January 2, 2018 regular board meeting to Monday, January 8, 2018 to begin at 10 a.m. in the headquarters boardroom. And secondly, move to reschedule the Monday, January 15, 2018 regular board meeting to Monday, January 22, 2018 to begin at 10 a.m. in the headquarters boardroom.
Is there a second?
Second.
And moved and reseconded to reschedule our January meetings as just was previously stated. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion is carried.
Thank you for that. I think that's going to help us a lot. So are we ready with the...
I could not get... So we're waiting for Todd Walsh on the last resolution.
But what about the motion on the LED?
That's what I'm just about to hand out. We do have that ready to go.
So we have one more that we can do for sure.
Rebecca, by the way, while I'm thinking about it and all the commissioners are hearing, like you to put on our calendar for the next meeting, the December 19 meeting, election of board officers 2018 year.
That's right.
So, commissioners, if I could introduce this, you'll recall at the last meeting, Andrew Grissel gave you an update on his proposed consideration of changes to the LED streetlight or to the streetlight rates to reflect the LED rates. So what I've given you is a motion that in conformance with the district's rate resolution actually sets the three informational meetings. These are not special meetings of the board. They're just informational meetings, although board members could attend, and a final hearing date on the now scheduled January 8th, Monday. There is a requirement that the three informational meetings take place within a 15 to 30 day window in advance of your public hearing, so you're changing it to the 8th actually makes these dates work. So,
and a question, if more than two commissioners choose to attend any one of these meetings, do we need to
list them? You could set them all as special meetings if you choose. That's up to you.
I don't know that will be the case, but I just wondered if we needed to do that if there was.
No, we haven't in the past. There are informational meetings, and actually in the past the commissioners have, I'm going to say, typically not attended those informational meetings, but okay. There have been exceptions where commissioners have showed up.
Okay. So, but we do need to set these informational meetings.
You do. And this motion accomplishes that. Or proposed motion.
I'll read it.
Okay.
All right. So, Commissioner, I move to set public informational meetings regarding the development of an LED streetlight rate. And then Eric, I go and read the locations.
Yes, please.
So the SLAM PD Auditorium at 222 Chumstick Highway, Leavenworth, at 5:30 p.m. on December 11th, 2017. The Chelan PUD Conference Room at 1034 East Wooden Avenue, Chelan, at 5:30 p.m. on December 12th, 2017. And the Confluence Technology Center Skycomish Room, 285 Technology Center Way in Wenatchee, at 5:30 p.m. on December 20, 2017. And a hearing to be held at the Chelan PUD Board of Commissioners Conference Room, 327 North Wenatchee Avenue, Wenatchee, on January 8, 2018, as part of the regular commission meeting at the Chelan PUD headquarters building.
Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to set a series of public informational meetings and a hearing. It's been read into the record. Is there any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried.
Thank you, Commissioners.
We're still waiting for the one, but we could take action on the two
you could.
Resolutions 16 and 18. If that is the, we just have the one outstanding resolution, number 19. So. Their motion to approve resolution 16 and 18.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we would approve resolution 16 and 18.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is carried. So we just have one resolution left, resolution 19.
I would like to, if I could, cover a couple other items.
Okay.
Otherwise, we'll need to cover in the end.
Okay.
The first is we had a delegated action item to get back to you with respect to the usage rate at BB Park. And I just want to call to your attention, if you didn't see it, that Jeff Smith sent an email on November 29th that provided that data. So it's it should be available to you.
I got it via email.
Yes.
Yeah.
Email.
Yeah.
So that was it. We only had one delegated action item. I did want to raise one other issue that I think is potentially of great significance. So the tax bills that have passed the House and Senate don't directly address issues for us, the big issue for us has been the maintaining tax-exempt financing capability for entities like Chelan PUD, and that is not changed in either bill. But the implications of these bills are significant in a couple of different ways. So, first of all, reducing the corporate rate from the 35% to the 20% range, whatever it ends up as, limits the potential for parties to be able to take advantage of tax credits. And tax credits are an issue particularly with respect to the development of the wind and solar markets. And there is a great deal of consternation in the wind and solar development community going on today with respect to what's going on in the tax bills. And in addition, there are some provisions that specifically make it more difficult to be able to take advantage and be able to monetize some of those tax credits. So the combination of those two things, we don't know how this will turn out. Obviously, the bills are going to conference, but there's a lot of talk about trying to move very quickly, even in advance of Christmas. Could have some pretty significant impacts in terms of the development of resources in the western U.S. There also are provisions that limit the ability to do advanced refundings, which would apply to us and to others and in the municipal community, which are of concern as well. And there's a full-on approach from all of the municipal entities to the Congress to try to speak to the benefits of being able to maintain advanced refunding capability. So some fairly big things there that could have an impact on both costs and revenues for the district in the coming years. I want to make sure that was on your screen.
Steve, I subscribe to Energy 202 of the Washington Post, and there's concern being aired there, and I don't know if it's accurate or not, that what you're talking about, there are some provisions there that could ultimately stop projects under construction dead in their tracks.
Yeah, I'm not enough of an expert on these things to be able to speak to specifically how the financings are occurring, but I can tell you that that message is being broadcast pretty broadly by the wind and solar community as to the risk.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a future risk. It's an immediate risk is what they're saying. So.
Right. So the production tax credit remains in place. The bills don't repeal that. But the question is, are you able to take advantage of the production tax credit and actually get the cash out of it?
Okay. Thank you. So we've done all of our consent and all but one agenda item. Manager items, you're completed?
I am. Maybe we could take a five-minute break? That would be my suggestion to see if we can get this last item in, because we have somebody coming down from the CPC to handle the last
item. Yeah, I'll check.
Okay.
Oh.
Okay. Gotcha. Well, are there any commission items? I'd just like to, well, we haven't got many staff left in the room, and I think just about everybody here was at the annual conference of WAPUTA last week. But that conference keeps getting better and better and better, in my estimation, and the presenters were just simply outstanding. On broadband, had one of the team leaders that worked on the Flint, Michigan water problem. That was a powerful presentation, absolutely powerful.
Those should be available on the website, right? Yeah. All the PowerPoint presentations?
Yeah, the PowerPoint. That will be very good, but his presentation went well beyond the PowerPoint.
Did it?
Yeah, it really did. Very passionate young man. And then there was the video. did you see the whole video, Steve?
I did.
So I want to.
I thought I was unavailable.
just thinking you need to tool yourself up a bit to match Mr. Ivory.
Yeah, give you a whole new perspective on your fellow manager across the river?
It did. He has a lot more courage than I realized.
I thought the same thing.
So I just wanted to thank Gary for sitting in for me. I wasn't able to attend the conference, and he attended the water meeting, and I understand it wasn't the most pleasant of meetings, but there were difficulties. But anyway, thank you for staying That's hard to do. I'm hoping we'll be able to change this so that we're not having water meeting on Friday after a long, fun conference when everybody's ready to go home. But so thank you for doing that, Gary.
Wednesday morning before might be better.
Absolutely. Wednesday would be fine.
Yeah. That was a suggestion.
I've suggested it before, but it's there's a groundswell, I think, now,
yeah.
Finally.
Yeah, it has fallen on deaf ears for a long time, but there is. The momentum is picking up.
Yeah.
Just a brief question. I think I have a calendar wrong in my calendar. Waputa's meeting in January is what dates?
8, 9, 10, something like
10.
That. Or yeah. 9, 10, 11.
9, let's see.
It's Wednesday, Thursday, Friday of that week.
Of the 8th.
Yeah.
In January?
It is 10, 11, 12. It's 10, 11, 12, Wednesday,
yeah.
Thursday, Friday.
Yeah. And I would just also like to chime in and make a comment and go back to your earlier comments, Randy, about the Flint, Michigan presentation and the water issue. I think probably everyone in this room has seen or heard or read or is aware of the fact that they had some really dire situations with their water. But my takeaway from that really had to do not so much with the water as with those electeds that were responsible for making sure that the water was healthy and something that would not harm people. That's an example in my mind of what not to do and all the things that were wrong that were done. The lack of transparency, the lack of truly listening that perhaps there is a problem and these folks are speaking out in a way that would warrant some additional investigation. It became clear that these folks just dug their heels in and they crossed over an imaginary line when they couldn't go back. They couldn't say, well, let's take a look at this. They had said so much and had taken so many steps towards denying that there was any problem, that it became impossible at some point for them to really acknowledge that maybe there is a problem. And in hindsight, I would like to point out that my brief experience of 3 years at the end of this month as being a commissioner, that is not what happens at Chelan PUD, and that Chelan PUD has been very willing to take a look when folks have concerns, to listen to what people say, and to admit they're wrong when they're wrong. And that, to me, is the hallmark of being a good elected, listening to the people, and also the staff. I mean, we take our marching orders to some extent for, as staff does their research and they do due diligence. Staff is very thoughtful in listening to the ratepayers of the county. So that's my takeaway from what went wrong in Flint.
So, Gary, you said just exactly what I was going to say, although I've been on the commission for 13 years, and this is not, I mean, I'm very proud to say that I work with all of you, and this is not a complacent board of commissioners. And we question everything. We question staff at times. Staff generally are the experts, but if it just doesn't feel right and doesn't seem right, none of us are afraid to go against the grain and question staff. It wasn't always that way with the Chelan Board of Commissioners, and I'm just very proud to be a part of this group.
Well, my mantra from my previous vocation has always been accept but verify. So hopefully staff doesn't take that wrong, but that's just the way I am.
Well, and it is difficult, and I heard that when I first came in. It's kind of difficult because when you're not a commissioner, you're looking externally from the outside in. Once you become a commissioner, you do a lot of your work up here on the third floor, and you have a terrific, unbelievably smart and professional staff that is working with you, and it becomes really difficult to keep that external, somewhat of an external view. You now have an internal view, but we still have an oversight charge. And so you have to work very hard at, I have anyway, had to work really hard at making sure I balance that internal and that external view of our business, of our work.
So there's nothing more to come before us at this moment,
we're not going to make it
yeah.
to the last item.
Yeah. We'll recess till 1 o'clock. Good afternoon. I'd like to welcome everybody to the afternoon session of the December 4, 2017 meeting of Chelan Public Utility District. We met this morning in a combination study and business session. We managed to conduct a number of our business items before lunch that were scheduled for after, but we had the time, so we did that. But this afternoon, we've got a couple of significant items to go over. The first will be a I-937 public hearing, and then a presentation by staff and request on advanced metering infrastructure. I recognize there's a number of people in the audience that will probably be wanting to provide us some input on especially the AMI, and would I'd like to remind everybody that this meeting is being recorded. We have a microphone up here at the front table, and that if you wish to testify at any point that you come to the table, use the microphone and state your name and address for the record. And when we get to that point, depending on how many people do want to testify, we will be asking you to limit your comments to 3 minutes, and I'll check in to see how many want to make comments. And our clerk of the board, Rebecca, has agreed to act as the timekeeper for that, making the assumption that there's a number of you that do wish to testify. So anyway, but before we get to that, we will start with our public hearing on I-937 targets.
Okay. Under Washington State law, Initiative 937, we do have energy efficiency targets that have met. So today, we did have a discussion of this at our last board meeting. They were bringing forward a resolution establishing the district conservation potential plan and 2-year conservation target and amending the 2016-17 plan and target due to a mathematical error as required under RCW 19.285. Looks like Jim White is going to present for us today.
Eric asked me to come on up, but we had presented this 2 weeks prior. Our public notice is part of the requirement for I-937. We are setting our targets for the next 2 years, biannual target. The target has gone up from 1.78, which is the correct number. It was set for the past two bienniums of 1.78 average megawatts. And then we did our own and participated in providing information. And we're doing another conservation potential assessment for the next 2 years, and it's gone up to 2.44 average megawatts based on the information that we provided to the consultant. So this is the formal adoption of those that conservation target for the next 2 years.
Okay, is there questions before I open it for public input, because this is a public hearing?
And my name is Jim White, and I'm the Senior Energy Efficiency Engineer for Chelan County PUD.
Thank you. Any input on the proposed targets? Hearing none, commissioners, I would entertain a motion to approve the 10-year conservation potential plan and 2-year conservation target.
Mr. Chairman, I move approval of resolution establishing the district's 10-year conservation potential plan and 2-year conservation target and amending the 2016-17 plan and target due to a mathematical error as required under RCW Chapter 19.285.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. You've all heard the motion. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Motion is carried. All right. Item 9, advanced metering infrastructure.
This is a resolution authorizing staff to proceed with development and design of an advanced two-way metering infrastructure system as the preferred alternative for future customer metering and to be assumed as part of the integrated customer technology program that includes the new customer information system, CIS, and meter data management, MDM. John Stoll will be presenting today. And I would just say this has been a lengthy public process, and there was also a presentation at the last board meeting. summarizing material that's been presented over the course of many months.
Thank you, Steve. Good afternoon, Commissioners. John Sowell, Managing Director of Customer Utilities. I'll just read this verbatim. The purpose, as Steve has mentioned, is to provide a resolution authorizing staff to proceed with the development and design of an advanced two-way metering infrastructure system, or AMI, as the preferred alternative for future customer metering and to be assumed as part of the integrated customer technology program that includes the new customer information system, the CIS, and the meter data management system, MDM. This presentation will essentially walk through the resolution with a bit more background and context. So we'll touch on the historical background and related efforts. We'll briefly go over the benefits to both customers from a direct benefits as well as overall efficiencies and cost savings that customers will receive. We'll discuss the outreach that's been conducted. We'll talk about the issues that were raised, the research findings. And if approved, we'll go over the proposed path forward with this effort. I would like to recognize, too, that although there's been a lot of activity this past year, 2 years, really this project's been going on since 2005 when we really saw a movement for the two-way metering coming into the forefront. Folks like Andy Wendell, Mark O'Brien, our communications folks, Chad Rissman, a lot of folks have been working on this. We've had the opportunity to really learn a lot. We've had the opportunity to go out and conduct site visits, go to a lot of utilities who've installed this. As you recall from the map 2 weeks ago, a majority of Washington Electric utilities have it either installed or in the process of installing. So we've had the opportunity to learn from them. We installed a one-way metering system for all our water meters back in 2006, 2007. When we realized this course of looking at advanced metering, over the years we've reduced our full-time meter reading workforce from 13 to 2, and we've established a meter reading contract that fills the gap between the one-way reads and the manual system. As I mentioned, we've expanded that to over 16,000 meters. We started that back in the late 80s, or 90s, and that has been our standard meter whenever we install one. We've sought the expertise in the industry. We've used Utiliworks, a very highly regarded firm, to work with us. We've refreshed the business case just recently this year, but we updated back in 15, and you know, originally we started this in 05 with a business case. We've had the opportunity to research as much literature and information, look at what the experts have saying around health, privacy, and security matters. You've seen this before, but just again, a quick highlight of what I would classify as a pretty conservative business case, but it does describe a project that has positive benefits. As I mentioned this morning, again, things like the cryptocurrency, high-density loads, having this type of technology in place will save a tremendous amount of staff time. That's not in the business case when we put it together. The direct customer owner benefits, better management of energy use. Through that, ways to determine if conservation, energy efficiency programs can save money. Back to Jim White's previous presentation, the ability to really have a lot of data to present to customers on what might be opportunities for them from a conservation standpoint will be significant. On the outage side, having this information to be able to see who's off in an extended outage. Right now, it's pretty much we rely on our customers or going through with physical inspections and seeing if a porch light is on. And as we've heard from some of our customers, even the people who have second homes, the ability to understand if, you know, they're homes out of power on a onesie, twosie basis to be able to identify that. The ability to respond to high bill inquiries to provide customers information on what is driving their bill. The ability to access through a variety of future means. The ability to reduce the amount of estimates we have to do for weather conditions or things of that nature. And then we've heard this from a lot of customers is the ability to reduce our impact on accessing customers' property for reading the meter. the efficiencies and cost savings. Again, this was given the business case and what we will see. This will help reduce rate pressure on our bill, but we see that through, again, a meter reading savings, other truck rolls that we do for a variety of things, the reduction in call handling costs, outage restoration and the management thereof, increased meter accuracy, the ability to take this information and really inform our asset management strategies. Where are we spending our money in our capital program, and really being able to use that information to make the best decision? Improvements in safety when you're not out in the field, doing essentially hundreds, thousands of site visits, as well as a carbon footprint reduction. This past year, we had the opportunity to really put out a focused effort. Again, appreciate all the support. It was very worthwhile. I know we were able to reach a lot of people through the meetings that were held within the community. Around 450 people attended. There were, I believe, 18 meetings. There was a lot of direct mailings, emails. We do have a landing page website that's been established that has tracked a lot of that information, and it's out there with multiple links to the sources on the issues that were raised, as well as our business case and things of that nature. We presented to the commission twice, once in May and then early June. And I believe Suzanne Hartman had the opportunity to present to the Chelan City Council in August. And I know in between that, we've had lots of conversations and phone calls from a wide variety of customers.
So, John, those community meetings you're talking about, that included the service club meetings? Is that type of meeting?
Yeah, we had meetings. Again, went to various city council meetings, had specific meetings in a lot of areas. I know we all kind of took on separate meetings. We had meetings in Plain and Lake Wenatchee, you know, all throughout the county. So the customer feedback we had, again, we had lots of favorable comments. People have been asking, when will this be coming? Because they've come from areas who've had that before. I think, again, we got some really strong feedback from folks who live in more of the remote areas, how that would help them. I remember an electrician came forward and talked about the benefits that would provide in understanding what issues may be going on in a home. But we heard some concerns as well. I mean, certainly forefront, the radio frequency EMF, electromagnetic fields, was a concern. Meter safety, data privacy and security, and then the discussion around an opt-out policy or program. Through that effort, we listened to the community members. We had the opportunity to go over that research. I think one of those meetings, and I believe it was May or June, we went through that in pretty detail. And again, that information, again, to restate, the website is out there, including the presentations that were given. This isn't intended to go through and be very detailed, because we've done that, but just wanted to hit some high points. AMI meters emit very infrequent pulses of radio frequency, and there's not a significant increase in health risk due to the use of RF associated with AMI meters. Through looking at the literature that was out there, that was the conclusion we reached. Meters must meet safety requirements and standards per the National Electric Safety Code. Rigorous standards. What we've learned, too, is what we've seen through other utilities is that when you change meters, there tends to be issues with the meter base itself and loose wiring. We've actually done some wholesale meter exchanges before, and we pay particularly close attention to that when we find that, and we work with the customer to remedy that issue. The district has a very strong privacy policy, and we're committed to maintaining that, in addition, consistent with state and federal consumer protection laws. And as we've discussed, we are committed to offering an opt-out program. So the recommendation is in the best interest of the district to move into the budgeting process for AMI as the preferred alternative for future customer metering and as part of the overall comprehensive customer information system meter data management project, and to create an associated request for proposal to be reviewed and approved by the Board of Commissioners prior to issuing. And as we talked 2 weeks ago, that's why we're here now, to see that approval, is we've got that pretty strong fork in the road when looking at the customer information system and meter data management system that we anticipate bringing forward first of the year for board approval on the path to install. We would anticipate then initiating the project in Q1, Q2 of 2018. Again, this is if the AMI project is approved. We would then use that opportunity as we're implementing the meter data management system to inform our business requirements in support of a request for proposal. We would develop that over the back half of 2018. We would bring that back to the board early in 2019 for approval of that request for proposal, and then we would begin reviewing responses, and if the timeline goes as we initially project right now, we would be looking at late 2020 for installation. That concludes my presentation, and certainly open for questions.
Commissioners, questions for John? I'm sure Gary will be back momentarily.
I'll have comments later, but I'm just anxious to hear from our public.
So we're being asked to approve Resolution 9, and I anticipate that most everybody in the audience is aware of that, and so that resolution would be to authorize staff to proceed with the development and design of an advanced two-way metering infrastructure system as the preferred alternative for future customer metering, and to be assumed as part of the integrated customer technology program that includes the new customer information system and meter data management. And that's the resolution that we're going to be asked to go over, and I recognize there's a number of people here that potentially would like to provide some, one, input or potentially questions for clarification. And if you would humor me, how many in the audience would really wish to testify? If you give me a show of hands. Okay, there's six or seven. What I would like to do is invite you to testify, ask Rebecca to set her phone for 3 minutes and give you a high sign at 1 minute, like with that bit, the card she's got in her hand. And that way we can sort of keep on track. And I imagine your phone has an alarm, right? Okay, well, we don't need to hear it yet, but we'll hear it. So I would like to open the floor to people to provide input on the proposal that's before us.
I'll probably not use the alarm, though, because that'll turn on all my notifications.
Oh.
I'll just let you know when it has.
Okay, 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 very good. So who would like to, if you could come up and use the mic, and again, give us your name and address for the record, and that you can use the portable mic or you can sit either one. So,
my name is Robin Castle, and 117 Freedom Lane, Chelan. Been a resident for 25 years. I want to make a comment. We did have a meeting in Chelan on the 8th, but the Smart Meter Group is who initiated that, and we initiated it because we want we would like to have our whole city opt out. So that was initiated by us, and I wanted to make that clarification. So I want to thank you guys for listening again, and you're all aware that I feel these smart meters, or what you call advanced meters, are extremely harmful to our biology and to our environment, and therefore I'm going to move into the subject of liability according to our constitutional rights and our liberties. In January of 2017, Hawaii Electric proposed to blanket all islands of Hawaii with smart meters and an opt-out program. The people of Hawaii pulled together and submitted notices of liability to their elected officials and anyone involved in the smart meter rollout. Shortly after receiving these official mass action of liability, they changed their proposal to a opt-in, which required the customers wanting a smart meter They had to give a signed, explicit consent. This was a huge turnaround. No opt-out, just an opt-in, as long as they gave consent, which then took the liability off of the officials. The Seattle Smart Meter Seed Group also served their officials that wanted to install smart meters, and it seems that the notice is now stalling some of the rollout in the area that this is happening. If you do choose to vote for installation of advanced meters, we, the Smart Meter Awareness Group of Chelan County, will be pursuing the course of action of notice of liability to all that's involved in the rollout to the smart meters. Okay.
1 minute.
We're not going away. Please vote for our health and our safety. Vote for our environment. Vote for our kids. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello. I'm Suzanne Keller, and I reside at 71 Wheatland Lane in Chelan. And I've done a lot of research on these meters, and I have yet to read about any indication they do not cause harm. The manufacturers and the PUDs say they're safe, but no one out there, no information, no hard proof will back those allegations and guarantee their safety. On the other hand, there is a plethora of mounting evidence that people are experiencing serious harmful effects from the electromagnetic radiation the meters are emitting. The American Academy of Environmental Medicine is proposing, quote, an immediate caution on smart meter installation due to potentially harmful RF exposure. And I sent you all the report, and I hope you had a time to check it out. The smart technology is embedded in our TVs, our ovens, refrigerators, all of our home appliances, all the newer appliances. And it doesn't appear that it actually improves the functionality or the efficiency of them. According to the propaganda, it's a way to make life easier by programming or managing them from a control center or a smartphone. Personally, that seems ridiculous and far more trouble than it's worth, but I do understand not everybody sees it that way. Nonetheless, it's a steady stream of data about our personal behavior that can be combined with other information to provide marketers, insurers, and others with extremely intimate portraits of the life we lead when we think no one's watching, and that's totally creepy. Isn't it curious that all the manufacturers of the home appliances have already unanimously incorporated this element into their products? It seems to indicate that this is a very well-orchestrated strategy for some nefarious reason, and that may sound like conspiracy theory or maybe just logic. So is the installation of these smart meters honestly meant to improve service to the customer, or is something else going on? Okay. So we'll just cut this short. These are highly invasive surveillance devices, and that's a violation of our rights. You cannot spy on people in their homes. That is treason. So, and also, I want to just reiterate about the opt-out. I think I sent you a video, hope you saw that, because it's unlawful, basically. This is a very serious issue, and I sympathize with you commissioners to have to make this decision and to personally accept the liability involved. Radiation and surveillance of private property has no place whatsoever in a free society. And I do hope you'll consider the opt-in versus the opt-out if you do decide to move forward. So thank you for listening to my concerns.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Lindy Hoshikawa, and I live at 5787 Campbell Road in Pishaston. Thank you for listening to our comments here and considering everything that that we're bringing up in this meeting. I think it's extremely important that we continue the discussion about these advanced meters and the infrastructure that we are proposing here to implement. My understanding is that that the smart meters use the existing wireless infrastructure to transmit data, and that means it's jumping on a 900 megahertz frequency, which, if I'm mistaken, please correct me. I don't know if this is the devices that you're going to use. I don't know who the makers are. We haven't heard who the makers are, what the models are, what the types of functions these devices will have, and these are things that I'm extremely interested in, and hopefully you'll allow the public to be part of the discussion when that does happen. My other concern is about 900 megahertz, is that it's an extremely invasive frequency for human biology, for cellular function. It decreases motility in sperm. It increases oxidative stress, and I've sent each and every one of you, commissioners, 5 reports that are published, peer-reviewed by scientists that prove 900 megahertz does affect human biology. So my question is, I'm sorry for, I don't remember your name, I didn't jot it down, but you said that the literature out there doesn't prove, but I would love to know exactly what literature you're speaking of, because just as Suzanne testified before me, I have yet to find a real study that says that wireless technology is completely safe. It simply isn't out there. Thank you. The reason why I'm here is because one day I suddenly felt my Wi-Fi modem. That's why I'm here, because I felt it in my body and I knew what it was. At first I thought, oh, I must be crazy that I'm feeling my modem. And I went about my business. I started researching it a little bit, but sure enough, a year later, we are now a wireless-free house. We've unplugged our wireless connection this year, and it's made a huge difference for us. My husband's insomnia has decreased. My children don't have temper tantrums. I can sleep through the night. My dreams have returned. There are so many things that I would like to share with you guys. I know I'm out of time at this moment, but please consider our health, and thank you for listening.
What is your name again?
Lindy Hoshikawa.
Thank you.
Hello. My name is Laura Folsom, and I live at 329 East Trow in Chelan. And I've been a resident for 35 years in the Chelan area. And my thoughts are going towards the opt-out program, because we've listened very carefully into the meetings, and we're told that as these meters come off, that they are being recycled and taken apart and not really shelved and kept for future use, and that the intention, and it was very clearly stated in the meeting in Chelan, that the intention was to not actually keep these meters going. The intention is for them to disappear and go away, and that we may have an opt-out program for a short amount of time, but that in the future it was not really going to be there, is the way that I heard all of the information. And when you truly are in a grid that is all around your whole community, opting out, you can't really get out of those frequencies. Just because you don't have the meter on your home, you have a quarter-mile grid all through your whole community, which is sending out frequencies. And there may be the instance that the repeater needs to be next to your house. So all of this information is coming through the neighborhood and through your home to these meters. So I haven't heard any real truth. They keep saying that we are looking at an opt-out program. I haven't really heard of one that, you know, has been really presented, other than it's probably going to be there. But I did hear her say at the meeting in Chelan that these meters were not going to be around forever. So I feel like the opt-out program is basically a fallacy, and it's not truly going to be there. It's something to give us hope that, oh, okay, we have an option. But in my mind, I think that we actually don't have an option, that is just a fallacy, and that needs to be looked at too. You know, and I do like the idea of opting in as well, that it should be our choice if we want one, or people that are happy with this and do feel like it will not hurt their health to be able to please opt in and everything. But I don't feel like it should be forced on all of us. And again, with the liability, Who in this room can tell me that 100% that we are positive and that you stake your reputation and your business on this, that it will not harm me or my family, and that you can guarantee me 100% that you will take care of me and my family if something does happen? Because I'm pretty sure that those little loopholes are in there, that we will not be responsible if something happens. And that's a very clear statement. Unless you can stand behind it and make sure that you are guaranteeing that we will take care of you if something does happen to your health, then really I think there's some doubt in everyone's mind as to whether they're 100% safe for our human bodies and our ecosystem and our bugs, our bees, and things like that. You know, our bodies are a little bit stronger than those frail structures of animals, of the, you know, the wildlife. So thank you very much for listening.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. I am Dr. Chandra Villano. I live at 1421 North Arbor Terrace in East Wenatchee. I am a Douglas County resident, but I am here because a significant amount of my patient population lives in Chelan County, and I am mostly just here to give my professional support to an opt-in program, kind of due to the radio frequency, EMF, and liability issues. And I just want to bring to the table that in medicine, we are heading towards something called functional medicine, which is bringing the best of naturopathic medicine along with conventional medicine. I am a licensed ND. I'm a primary care provider in the state of Washington. I have a private practice, and I also, for 11 years, I am a founder, a board member, and a teaching faculty of a 501c3 nonprofit called the Ease Cancer Foundation. So my professional career is dedicated to health and wellness and to cancer survivorship. And what I would say about in the national functional medicine movement is that there is increasing concern in evidence-based medicine looking at mitochondria. And mitochondria are something that are in our cells that are greatly affected by electricity. And the World Health Organization does view radio, wireless radiation as a 2B carcinogen. So for me, I have concerns just about the health aspects. And I can't bring you a lot of studies, but what I know from the Puget Sound Functional Medicine Group, where I go for certified continuing medical education, is that what is being presented to us as primary care providers is that a lot is being talked about for cancer and for heart, and a really surgence of coming up in health is neurodegenerative disease, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, dementia. And what is being looked at is the effect on mitochondria. And so I wrote a letter in June, and numerous other medical professionals signed that letter with me then. I, due to a very busy schedule, haven't been able to attend, and most of them couldn't attend today also. But I would just love to give my support of an opt-in program, because then the benefits and whoever wants it can absolutely have that, you know, benefit that they want. And those that don't, it's not mandated, and concerns about, you know, would an opt-out program run out of time or something, you know, wouldn't be a problem. And to me, it seems like a strong solution to help everything. So in the name of those health questions that aren't fully answered, but there are major national and World Health Organization concerns, I would love our community to put those at the forefront. Thank you very much.
Can you spell your last name for me, please?
Yes. V as in Victor. Illano.
Thank you.
And Chandra, if you want, is Chandra.
Thank you very much.
You use the phrase 2B. Is that a classification, as in 2B, or a future tense phrase?
It is the number 2 and the letter B.
Thank you. Yes. So it's a classification.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yep. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
Additional comments?
George Mackey, 113 East Raymond. Nice to see you folks again. Remember last June we had a nice time. I spent way too much time, so I'm glad you're limiting me to 3 minutes. Regarding that last question, the World Health Organization and the CDC, Disease Control Center, recognizes electromagnetic frequency pollution as a class 2B carcinogen. So that, just to help add along with that. One of the things we're not really discussing here, this is just the tip of the iceberg. We have something called 5G. This is the beginning of the camel getting his nose under the tent. 5G operates at 24, and it, as I mentioned before when I was here, background in configuration management at Boeing, so I have a pretty good technical background, and I'm not just talking completely off the top of my head, although this is mostly off the top of my head. 5G operates at 24 to 100 gigahertz. That's a microwave millimeter frequency that permeates virtually every square inch that people will live in and operate in. These particular devices we have now are the gateway to that. And there's a guy by the name of Eric Schmidt, CEO of Google, who addresses this factor. Another guy by the name of Tom Wheeler. He's the head of the FCC now. I highly recommend everybody here go to YouTube. 5G technology, what you will need to know. This literally will turn every square inch of our environment into a millimeter terahertz scanner. So in terms of what Sandra was speaking about, transcutaneous cellular communication, our cells, the whole world is made up of photons of light. Photons, in terms of literally microorganisms of each universe. Each cell can be measured with 1,000 photons of light emission per second. What we're looking at here, what we're dealing with, particularly we get into 5G, but even at this level at 900 megahertz, which is what these things are operating at, which is right next to our cellular communication range, we're talking about that which will literally destroy atoms in the universe within each cell of every person. This is just the gateway. 1 minute? Okay, so I'm going to repeat that one more time. 5G technology, what you need to know. Real quickly, Wheeler, in this particular piece, he talks about everything from pill bottles to plant waters will be affected. In other words, every single thing, there'll be a nanobot in every single aspect of our lives by which we'll be tracked, trailed, and ultimately through infrasonic, radionic, and psychotronic control, we will be controlled. Our battle is not with flesh and blood. It's with powers and principalities, and that's what we're dealing with. And I'll end with this. Came to me this morning when I woke up. Robert Oppenheimer, the father of the A-bomb. We knew the world would not be the same. A few people laughed. A few people cried. Most were silent. Of those 33,000 emails, I'd like to know how many people were against the smart meter implementation. And he quoted the Bhagavad Gita. Now I become death, the destroyer of worlds. And I place that openly with love and intent to each of you. That's where we're at. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Judy Gimbala, and I live in Manson. And I want to thank you all for be willing to listen to us about this. And I noticed the gentleman that presented such a good case about the smart meters said that this was in for the good of the district. But on the PUD building, you proudly say that you're owned by the people that you serve. And these people here represent so many more people that feel really strongly about this. I don't want to see any of you accept the personal liability, because Robin's right, we're not going away. There comes a time as Americans and people of integrity when you just have to stand up and say, no more. Radiation isn't good for us. I'm sorry if you think it's good for the district, but we don't. And you have to hear us. So please, really, really hear us and think about this. You all have pets. You all have grandchildren. Think about them. This is forever. This isn't a matter of feeling pleased that you put 11 meter readers out of a job. That's what's wrong with this country. I come from Pend Oreille County, one of the first PUDs in Washington State, and we read our own meters. Can you even imagine? We read our own meters, and no one cheated, and it all worked out just fine. I just see this is another way that we're being overrun as Americans, and I'm sorry for you. You have a huge job. You have to try to sell this to people who were really smart and were aware, and we have to convince these people who have so much power and just had to be brought up to speed so quickly on this. I just want to really thank you, and please, just think about the future. That's all I really have to say. Thank you for hearing us. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you. Additional public input? Commissioners, your thoughts?
Just that, I think, a couple of points of clarification on page 12 of John Stoll's presentation today. The last bullet point is the district is committed to offering an opt-out option. And I think it'd be a stronger statement if we, the offer is to you to take it. It will be there. That commitment is coming. It, you know, as part of that, you know, any decision going forward, that will be part of the decision. So the offer is to you. It's not that we're offering it and then we'll retract. That's not the case. So I hope that helps in terms of your question related to that. That is a commitment. And then I think I'd like to talk just a second on the definition of district. The people, including the employees that live in Chelan County, and the people in this room who have come today, are the district. And so when we refer to the district, it is the people of Chelan County that own it. We just happen to be fortunate enough to either be elected to the board or fortunate enough to be employed here. So it's not a physical place. The district is a reference to the people who came together in this county to form a district. So it is yours. It isn't ours. I live in Wenatchee, so I'm part of the district because I'm part of the ownership, if that makes sense. So the district is a definition of who we are as an organization owned by the people, not the reverse. It is yours. Yeah.
Could I ask you to come? You can use the hand mic if you want right there.
I had two questions, actually. We asked if a YouTube could be played about the opt-out today, and we sent it to Suzanne.
I think I've seen it.
I think individually we've all watched it.
Watched the opt-out?
Yeah. Yes.
The
yes.
opt-out and, mm-hmm. and that
yes.
idea.
Yes.
Steve has seen it. Eric has seen it.
Okay. And my second question is about, you said that the opt-out would be, it would always happen, but if you no longer make analog meters, and I've asked because I have one of those two-way on one of my properties, and they won't come and give me back an analog meter. And I know it's on. You can buy them, and yet I was told, no, I couldn't buy my own and then have it replaced. If you're no longer going to have the analog meters, how then, if our analog meters go out 2 years from now, will we be able to stay in the opt-out when you won't allow us to keep those? That's what our statement was.
John, I'd put you on the hook for that one.
Sure, yeah. We would have a solution. We're not, until we get responses back from a request for proposal, we'll know more. But there are models where you have one meter and you can turn off the transmitter, the RF piece, the radio piece of the meter. So it operates like a manual reader.
Do you have that now that people can get those?
No, we do not.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for letting me put you on that.
And I just want to further explain something about the meters. As technology continues to march forward, the manufacturers who make the traditional meter that you and I grew up with, they simply don't make them. And, well, currently, but I'm looking into the future. So there's a shift that's occurring amongst these manufacturers. As they see the demand going forward, because across the country the smart meters are being employed, and so it's a technological shift that you have to anticipate that will not be economic for these meter manufacturers in the future to continue to make these. And so that's something that when you look at the smart meter and the ability to turn off the radio frequency transmission part of it, that would be the alternative of the future. So that if you were to opt out, that would we're talking to the manufacturers to get an idea as to exactly what meters we're going to go with. We don't know that. We're taking this slowly. We're taking comment. And so that's why we don't have the answer. That's also why we don't have the answer about what does an opt-out look like, because we haven't made up our mind what it's going to look like. We're taking comment. That comment will help craft what it will look like as we move forward. So there, we're asking for a little bit of patience, and we're asking for a little bit of trust. We hear you. We're listening to you. We're inviting your comment. Please trust us. We hear what you say.
Come on up.
Need to be at the microphone, please.
You can pass it around.
So I'm just curious.
Could I get those, identify yourself again?
Oh, yeah. Lindy Hoshikawa, Shastin. Just wondering, would the smart meters, with the function to turn off, if you can switch off the radio transmission, does that mean that, I mean, how would you read, what would be the plan to read those meters that are not transmitting?
John, we should probably turn that to you.
They'll still have a digital readout that will show the kilowatt hours.
So a meter reader would have to go.
Yeah, it would be a physical access to the meter.
And one thing I'd like to point out is that currently when we have meter readers that are going out and they're visiting houses and they're reading the meters, that's approximately 200,000 miles a year that the meter reader staff is having to log in their car. And that's putting carbon and pollution in the air. So, you know, understand the balance is that if you're asking for someone to come to your house to measure, read your meter, you're really contributing now to polluting the air and putting carbon in the air. So there's a trade-off.
What's the problem with that? Really? I mean, what's the problem with us going out and reading our own meter? It's not impossible.
We need to have one person at a time up here, I think.
You want that? Yeah. And what the opt-out looks like will be a compilation of staff input and ratepayer input. So the idea you just suggested is being written down as we speak and will be part of the consideration. So I would encourage you to keep coming up with good ideas, please. And let's see what it looks like. And that's, I think, where Commissioner Arsenault is saying there has to be some trust in the sense of we invite input. We're glad you're here. We're glad you're giving it. Please trust us that we're hearing you, and what you're bringing forward will be incorporated in the discussions, and there will be more discussions as this thing rolls out. What we're considering today is to further the process so we can get to the type of meters, to the type of processes, to those kinds of things. And so it is important that you keep sharing with us what it is that's on your mind and help us discover ways to satisfy that that hopefully is good for everyone. So, but thank you. Yeah.
We've got more public comment.
I think you have to come up here.
George Mackey again for the record. On that last note, a real good point, there's about 16,000 of these units that have been put out. I live in a condominium that has 11 of them. Mm-hmm. I'm getting 190,000 to 232,000 spikes per day. I won't go into my own personal, but there's definitely effects for all the people in that
that building. So I ask you guys to consider what we're going to do with those ones that are already out there in use, and in my opinion, are potentially already creating the havoc that I spoke of earlier. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. John, do you have an answer for that?
Well, currently, that is our meter standard. If we would move forward with the two-way, we would replace all those. As the gentleman has mentioned, they do transmit on a frequent basis because it's the technology, assuming a receiver would drive by or walk by and they would pick up the read. As we've learned from the two-way meters, the current technology, that transmission has been reduced from, I think, 40 seconds to 90 seconds has been the range on a typical day of when it would send out its information. So we would anticipate that that RF signal would be, you know, reduced.
So John, right now we have about 16,000 one-way meters.
Correct.
We have rough numbers, 50,000 meters in the district.
Yeah, those are all on our residential meters. We have about 32,000 plus residential meters, so roughly half. So, or maybe it's 35,000, but it's close to half, over 40%.
Based on what you're saying, if we move forward with this, the bottom line result would be a dramatic drop in RF from our current position?
That seems logical, yes.
I'll jump in here. So where to start? I'm really conflicted on this, as you know, I have been all along. I'm conflicted because I cannot vote yes, and I'll explain that really clearly in a minute why I would not vote yes for the smart meters. I don't want to vote no. I don't want to be adversarial. And I know how hard you have worked on this and staff believes in it. I also know that these one-way AMR meters, which is the standard we're using right now, correct?
Correct.
Are certainly worse in terms of health effects than the new two-way meters. But I contend after doing a lot of research, I've been studying this for 2 years, there are health effects at the biological level from this radio frequency EMFs. We all received a white paper from Dr. Martin Paul. I don't know if you guys read it. I think Steve read it. He is a professor emeritus in biophysics at Washington State University. And he's been studying this very topic for many years. Back in 1971, there was a government study done on electromagnetic fields, microwave frequency electromagnetic fields. It was determined at that time that it is hazardous to your health. And since that time, there's been a huge body of work done on that specific thing. Dr. Martin Paul has done the majority of the work. His work has shown, and he actually has a mechanism to show it, has shown that at the biological level that cellular function is interrupted. And he actually describes and has proven, and there are 32 other studies that support this, has shown that the mechanism is that, and it's technical and it's involved, but it has to do with the excessive buildup of calcium in the cell, and that produces products like superoxides and nitrous oxides, and in turn you then get free radicals that are released. And we all know, I mean, we've all heard what happens with free radicals. This disrupts the function of the cell. And he talks about a couple different things. Free radicals, as we know, have been associated with cancer and breakage of single strands, DNA breakage. It's also been shown, in fact, he unequivocally states that the central cause of autism today is from this very mechanism of calcium buildup in the cells. And it's also tied very strongly to dementia and Alzheimer's. He has a number of other scientists who support his work. He also talks about the synapses, thank you. I got the syn part right. How neurons talk to each other. There's been a definite disruption in the synapse, which is how our brain functions, how one neuron talks to another. And through autopsies of folks who have autism, they have shown in these autopsies that this has been disturbed. So, you know, I know what industry states, I know what the government says, and they claim that there are no known health adverse health effects from this. But I think that industry safety standards are outdated, and I don't think they are biologically relevant. I have a paper here from WHO. Steve and I were actually talking about it earlier today, and they claim in here, World Health Organization, and I don't know how current this is. It doesn't say anywhere here. I'm not sure there's any way to know how current it is. But they even say in this paper, based on a recent in-depth review of scientific literature, the WHO concluded that current evidence does not confirm the existence of any health consequences from exposure to low-level electromagnetic fields. However, some gaps in knowledge about biological effects exist and need further research. So to me, that's not a guarantee. That does not prove that there are no health effects. And in fact, we have empirical scientific data that shows that there are detrimental effects to ourselves and how they function. And somebody mentioned the 5G. There are people out there who want to blanket the whole planet with 5G. And that is, that is skyrocketing exposure to these RF fields that are increasing at alarming rates. So, I cannot support this. I'd be more inclined to favor opt-in certainly than to go with it and ask people to opt out. When you ask people to opt in, at least they're making a deliberate, conscious decision to accept this. I think we should do this for the right reason. And I've heard lots of talk about, everybody else is doing it. Not lots of talk, but I mean, you do hear this. Other people are doing it. Everybody on all the other districts are doing it. It's a better option than the one-way meters. Those aren't good reasons to move forward in my mind. And there are too many negatives, for my part, in terms of health effects. So, I will not support it. And I apologize. Yeah. I know I'm being adversarial, but one more thing. I've always been one to preach. You have to have the courage of conviction. And so, I thought about abstaining, but then I thought, no, I don't believe in it. I think they're harmful effects. I'm looking at my grandchildren. I'm looking at the future of our planet. And so I'm gonna stick to my guns and have the courage of my conviction.
I've shared with Ann today that I appreciate very much her, her position and her conviction and her willingness to vote that. That's why you become a commissioner. Some thoughts, or at least a thought on my part, and I have no pretext of being a scientist. I was a history major and psych minor, but I can do arithmetic. And so I took a look at the, just roughly at the 16,000 one-way meters that we have now. And they broadcast essentially 24 hours a day, some more, some less, not more than 24 hours a day, but some less. But they've been installed from about 1998, 1999, until this date. So to get an exact data set would be arduous. So I'm going to go with an approximation. But if you multiply the 16,000 meters out times 24 hours, you end up somewhere in the neighborhood of 380,000 hours of emission a day by the meters, 380,000. If you go to the two-way meters that broadcast very, very short pulses of time, multiple times a day, you reduce that to about 1,200. And so when I look at, are we contributing to a situation, or are we looking at a direction that would reduce significantly from 380,000 to 1,200 hours of emissions of electromagnetic fields? It's a better spot by far than we're in now. And when you spread that, you know, the 1,200 hours out over the width of the county, it's significantly less saturation. And so, you know, that's one of the things that's been churning, you know, through my mind. So I would be, you know, that's just part of my thoughts related to that.
Yeah, excuse me. We,
microphone.
We have to come up to the microphone.
Because it's recorded.
And ask a question.
Yeah, for those people who are not here today, this is their access.
This is Judy Gimbala from Manson. With all due respect, it's still not a good option. It's still not good. We can't just keep choosing something that's not good for us just because it's we think it's the only option.
Okay.
There's always another option.
Mm-hmm.
We can find it. Just don't hurry this thing. Hurry tells you something isn't. Let's get it done.
I've been a commissioner 11 years, and we've been at this process for 11 years. I don't think that's a rush, in my opinion.
Well,
oh, certainly. But, yeah, no, I'm just saying I don't feel rushed.
Okay, good.
I don't feel compelled.
With all due respect, but I think there are people that are, and you just have to ask yourself, who benefits? Do the people that are making smart appliances benefit? Well, certainly. Do the people who make the meters benefit? Certainly. Do you benefit from the data about us? I mean, coming into our homes and figuring out when we're showering?
No, we don't come into.
We don't have.
We don't come into your homes.
I think there's.
We don't have that capability. We will not have that capability.
But that data, am I wrong? Will that be available to you? What I mean, if you know what wind power is being used. It's not too hard to figure out what you're using.
Well, that's speculation, and that's not an appropriate part of our business.
So let me, maybe I could.
Not for an institution with integrity.
No, we don't. No. That's not our intent whatsoever. Okay. Yeah, no, our business stops at the meter. Okay. Your business starts at the inside of the meter,
okay.
And that's entirely your life and your lifestyle.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
I did hear this comment from a couple of folks, so I would like to just take a moment to make sure we're clear about what the proposal is on the table. There are utilities around the country who have adopted smart meters and have also at the same time adopted programs where they provide time of use pricing or information that would allow them to communicate with appliances in the house and then be able to provide a pricing incentive associated with that. As far as I'm aware, those are all voluntary programs. But this proposal does not include that. The business case did not include that. The business case was simply for a smart meter transmitting the total electrical usage from the household back to the utility. So that's what's on the table here today, at least. Now, of course, this body can never commit a future body. I want to say that no matter what, whether it was something that you agreed with or didn't agree with, no legislative body can commit a future body. But that's just... For what we are proposing today, the focus is on smart meter usage, on total electric usage per meter.
Question for John Stoll before may answer some questions. If we even wanted to, and this addresses a question in the room, could we go back to mechanical meters? Is that even an option?
From what I've seen, there are mechanical meters, but most of them, I believe, are refurbished. I'm sure there's probably some very small manufacturers, but I think the utility grade meters, the GEs, Schlumberger, I don't believe they make them. They're digital meters nowadays.
So the question that we're talking about is the type of digital meter that we're
right.
going to have.
Yeah. Correct. Yeah. We will have digital meters.
Yeah. So the point being that where we're, what we're going to be replacing has to make sense for the future.
Correct, yeah.
Yes.
Robin Castle. So I wanted to make a comment about the 1,600 smart meters that are already on.
16,000.
16,000. Mm-hmm. None of those, no one gave permission for that. You did that. And so what I'm asking is, if people now are understanding, I didn't understand that I had one of those on one of my pieces of property until I started looking, and it was just slapped on. And so now you're saying, well, you put those on, and those aren't as good as the other ones. And so anyway, you didn't give us the opportunity to even say yes to those. So I don't know why that's a point. We don't want either one of them. I mean, we would like, if there is the digital without the RF frequency, then that's what I would like to have. And I've asked to have my other one removed.
Actually, just this is, you know, and Eric, correct me if I'm wrong. We're a public utility. The five of us are elected by the people of Chelan County. And we're a representative government. And the struggle, it's a struggle, and I will grant you that. But by virtue of the people of Chelan County electing us, they gave us that authority to make those decisions on their behalf. And you know, I, for one, you know, I take that sign on the wall right back there really, really seriously. And I'm listening to everything that's being said here today. But you have empowered this body, these five people, to make those decisions on your behalf. So it's not up to the individual, I don't believe.
Now, I believe in our Constitution, as far as anything being on our property that could be of harm, that goes against our constitutional rights.
I think we all have the choice of having electricity or not.
Right, but we wanted the choice of staying with an analog or staying with a device that isn't emitting the RF frequency, and we weren't given the choice with that 16,000.
If I may say something, the installing of the one-way meters occurred well before I was ever a commissioner. We've been looking at revising this for the last 10 years. I can't change the initial decision to install those meters, but I can choose to install a meter that significantly reduces the harm that you are talking about by going from 380,000 hours a day to 1,200. I can mitigate that under the authority that I have. I can't change the original decision. Mr. Wright just made the comment that a commission cannot bind a future commission. So if a commission in 1998 or 99 made that decision, I can't be responsible for that decision, but I can be responsible for amending that decision to do it in an entirely different way that has significantly less impact.
Well, we don't know if it's significantly less impact, and there will be more people. And as far as I have read with people that have had these smart meters, they say that they're only pulsing a certain amount, and right. Then when they actually take the meter thing to it, that isn't the truth.
Yeah.
So you're saying, and who's to guarantee that 2 years later they aren't going to be pulsing more? I mean, you're saying this is what it's going to be today. And what is it going to be in 10 years? Once you have those on everyone's house, you have control. This is the moment that we have an opportunity to make a change. And not once they come, once they're on, they're on. And you can then 10 years from now, you could spy on us. 10 years from now, there isn't, all of that can come about.
Yeah, but I think there's a point where we have to look at each other as residents of Chelan County and say, I trust you in terms of who you are as a human and what you do and the lifestyle you choose. And I would like you to look at me and say, I'm hearing what you're saying. Now, I don't necessarily agree with you, but I'm going to trust the fact that you're thoughtful and trying to do something that is a significant improvement. And when you go from 380,000 to 1,200, I don't know what your definition of significant is, but that's significant to me. And so you have every right and opportunity to be here and express your opinion, and I'm going to listen, I'm going to consider, and I'm going to make a decision. And that's all I can promise you.
You also know that as the commission, like you said, you might not be here in 10 years making that decision. So this decision you're going to be passing on to someone else, and once it's on everyone's house, so.
Commissioner Congdon.
Yeah, so herein is my difficulty with all this. Yes, probably there's less of a health impact with the two-way meters, but even that is harmful to our health. And if you do the research, if you spend the time, if you read between the lines, if you read this WHA report that says, however, there is gap in the knowledge in terms of biological effects, you're gonna believe in your heart that it is damaging. And I said it before, and I believe it. 10 years down the road, maybe five years down the road, we're gonna look back and say, What were we doing? What were we thinking? Why do we have an epidemic in autism? Why do we have an epidemic that the onset of dementia, the early onset of dementia and Alzheimer's is staggering? It's unbelievable. So it is better, but it's still not good. So,
yeah, but
you know, that's my struggle. And then just one more thing. I hear you, Dennis, and I read Dr. Martin Paul's work, read Dr. Campbell's work. And then the other thing I just want to say is I would hope that we would have an open mind to considering the other option, which is to opt in, because, and I don't know, you know, John, I haven't talked to you about that. I should have prior to this. I don't know how much greater the cost would be and how difficult that would be. I know we haven't done you haven't looked at it and done the analysis, but that gives people the opportunity to make an informed, conscious, deliberate decision. This is what I want, and I'm going to have you put it on my house. And I just think that approach is so much, makes so much more sense, and it's fair. It's fundamentally fair.
I guess my concern, Anne, is you have a cell phone, I have a cell phone, and we voluntarily put that up against the side of our head every day multiple times.
I don't put it by my head.
Well, anyway, and so we make that choice every day, and it's significantly more harmful than what we're talking about here. Bothers me.
Yeah, well, it is, and my cell phone is going to go into a sleeve that it's just like the sleeves you put on your credit cards so that signals can't go through.
I don't.
Yeah, my cell phone is going to go into a sleeve like that to protect me, and I'm probably going to be one of those that pulls the Wi-Fi out of my house.
Commissioner McKenna, do you want to make any comments?
Yeah, I was just gonna. I've just been listening, and as a cancer survivor from stage 4 cancer, I am. You know, I guess I am conflicted as a commissioner as well, on many levels. So one, I want to share my appreciation for those who have spoken today, on whatever your opinion is, just because I think those things are important, that we do need to focus on our health, and the health of others and the safety of others. So that's one area that I've been thinking about. You know, I've read everything I can possibly read, and it's not definitive, on either side of the issue. And so then I look at this and say, well, do we do nothing at all, or do we try to look at the reality of where we're at with our PUD and understand that, you know, historically, our assets have been changing over the years. They're going to continue to change. And meters are going to continue to change and be needed to be updated and installed, and that's nothing new in our industry. I'm conflicted on one side that, and I haven't really heard this, when you start talking about opt-in and opt-out and giving people choices, we have a business that requires minimum standards. We need to, for the safety of our employees, for the safety of people on the outside of our houses, we need, meters have been upgraded for years and decades, and will continue to be so. So I also believe as commissioners we need to continue to move forward, because I don't believe the option just to stand still is a prerogative. It hasn't been a prerogative up to this point, and I don't see, we're going to continue to, I'm getting as much pushback from our customers on having more access to information and as I am from people who are concerned about the health effects. So I have to think that, and bear with me, I apologize, I'm kind of taking some time here, but I think it's important for us to, I think we have been moving slowly. I think that if this does come to a vote today and it does move forward, we are going to continue to study it, continue to look at, I think we need to, what is our minimum standard, and then what is it that we can do to have the least impact on anybody, and provide as much flexibility as possible, at the same time realizing that it's our responsibility to create the minimum standard of what our utility needs to do our business. And so I'm conflicted on many sides, but I do believe we need to move forward with continuing this discussion, going out. I think this whole discussion is having an impact on what we go out and seek in the way of meters for the future that do the best that we possibly can do. I guess that's my point.
Thank you. Last final opportunity for questions, clarification. I think we've heard the testimony, but if there's questions for clarification, I think that would be appropriate still. Commissioners, what are your thoughts?
I'd like to just jump in here and say that this has been a real learning process for me. I had an awareness of RF technology primarily from my previous career. It was something that was looked at as an economic savings for companies. But in terms of diving into the potential medical issues, I had no idea until I have spent countless hours reading the things that you have forwarded to me. And every time there was a name reference of some individual in that email, I'd jot that down and then I'd go look that person up on Google. And then I would spend hours trying to understand what their knowledge base was. So this has been a a wonderful experience in terms of me learning. During all this irony, I will share with you, I have this little tag here. I went out and bought a new pair of gym shorts to work out in the gym, and it was this uncomfortable thing back here in my gym shorts, and I looked, and it's an RF tag. And so I cut it off. But as I dove into ever deeper trying to understand why manufacturers use the RF tags, I found one in my cereal box. Kellogg has it in their boxes. It's tracking. And so it is truly everywhere. I've jotted down a partial list of appliances and clothing tags and cereal boxes and washing machines and your radio. You drove here today in a car. It has RF signals in your car. You were exposed to that when you drove down here. We've already talked about cell phones and Wi-Fi routers, baby monitors. You're a mom. You've got children. I don't know if you have a baby monitor or not, but you know, you can get exposed with a KitchenAid mixer that you use to make your mashed potatoes on Thanksgiving. So the exposure is shocking to me that it is everywhere, and so it strikes me as if this is a significant problem. That a smart meter is really just a piece of that problem. There's a much, much, much bigger issue here. And whether there's smart meters or not smart meters really isn't going to solve the issue. You're still going to drive your car. You're still going to get RF exposure that way. Whether you have an appliance in your house or not, you're going to get exposure. If you have electricity running through your outlets, you're going to get exposure. And as I began to kind of deconstruct this whole process and go backwards in my mind, how do I deal with it? Well, you know, I guess at the end of the day, I'm just not willing to give up electricity. I want electricity in my house. And so I'm going to get some amount of RF exposure. And I live far enough out in the county that I need a car to get to where I'm going. So I'm going to get it there too. The real issue that I am conflicted on is, where do you start with this? And it seems to me that you go back to the source. Go back to the source. You don't pick breadcrumbs along the way. You go back to the source. The source is, number one, no conclusive medical evidence. Number two, the FCC guidelines maybe aren't stringent enough. So if you really want to fix it, if you're serious about fixing this, go to the source. You know, breadcrumbs along the way are just, they don't get you very far. And so as I look at this, and I'm kind of a doer, I do things. I try to get things done. It drives my wife nuts. Because at some point I'm done talking about it. I want to fix it. If it's broke, let's fix it. And I respect what each of you are saying, and I empathize with all the background that I've read now, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to encourage you to go to the source. Go to the FCC. Make a change. Deal with it there. Go to the medical community. Talk with them about looking for verifiable medical issues. Come out and make a stand. This is what's going to change the issue. All of a sudden, car manufacturers won't have RF signals. They'll find a way to get rid of it. And your cereal box may not have an RF in it. That's how you make a change. So that's where I'm conflicted. And I'm trying to really take this to a level where I can grab it in my head and make a difference myself. But I really truly think that with the long, long, long laundry list and probably growing, I don't know, probably growing list of things you're going to find RF signals in, that really this effort should be focused more on a nationwide level and a nationwide approach. And that's just to share with you how I am conflicted with this and with the decision that we're being asked to make. This is not an easy decision, trust me.
Ann?
Well, this is it. I won't say anymore. But I hear what you're saying, Gary and I. We talked about this earlier. But to people who fundamentally believe that these are harmful, and granted, I know that a smart meter on your house is a very small contribution to this overall sea atmosphere of signals that we're all swimming in. It is small. It's a very small piece. It's definitely smaller than our cell phones. But to people who fundamentally believe that it's harmful to their health, that it's an invasion of their privacy, to stand up and say to us, we want to make a conscious decision and tell you, yes, I want it. We don't want it just placed on our house. I mean, it's a fairness issue too. It's not just breadcrumbs. It's drawing a line in the sand, and I agree. We need to do more. We need to go higher. We need to talk to our representatives, to our medical community. But to say, no, I don't believe in it. I believe it's harmful to my health, to my children's health. I don't want it on my house. And that's hugely important to these folks. I mean, they believe, as I do in their heart, that these are harmful and that it's an accumulative thing. Everything accumulates.
If I can just address, and I get that. And if we were sitting here saying you can't have an opt-out, I'd be 100% in your camp. But the fact is, you can opt out. So that's where I can't tell Kellogg's I want to opt out from the RF tag in my cereal box. I can't tell the gym manufacturer I don't want this on my gym shorts. But I can tell Chelan PUD I opt out of having a smart meter. That's going to work. To me, that's huge compared to this.
But wouldn't it be better to say, hey, I've studied this, I believe in this, I want this on my house, versus it having it slammed on your house, you know? And
it's six of one, half a dozen of another.
You know,
if you have the ability to opt out, you don't get one, right? If you have the ability to opt in and you choose not, you don't get one.
I know.
The result's the same.
How many people in our community don't even have a clue what they're getting? I can tell you, most people, by far the large majority of people in this community, do not know what we now know, because we're in a position to need to know, don't know what...
What do we know?
What do we know?
Yeah, what do we know?
You now know a lot more about the effects of smart meters than you did before, because you're studying it.
I know a belief system.
Well, have you read all the research?
I've read a whole lot.
Yeah.
And
so,
yeah, I'm not sure you can read all the research, because it's probably the most prolific research topic on the planet. And but you can certainly do a significant sampling on each side. And I guess where I would like to leave my last comment today is to be able to come to a public meeting and express your thoughts and opinion is highly valued. We have 48,000 customers who aren't here today. And so I applaud your willingness, your courage, taking the opportunity to express what it is you believe and how you believe it. And again, it's your utility, and thanks for taking your time to give direction and thought to the utility. Much appreciated. Can't tell you how much that means. I admire and respect that by far more than people who don't know and don't care. The other thing is, too, there are other utilities who have just simply placed meters on homes and never had a public meeting for the public to, and they own it, to share their opinions. And I don't think that's appropriate either. So keep pitching and hitting, dinging us, calling us, emailing us, sharing. If this goes through today, it's the beginning of the design phase. Your input becomes more valuable rather than less. We may not end up with the exact product that you want, but you will make a difference in its design. And thank you.
The commissioners?
Where do we go from here on Resolution 9?
Well, at some risk. I'm not a risk-averse person, so we'll just go ahead. Mr. Chairman, I move that we accept Resolution 9 as presented, and it's a resolution authorizing staff to proceed with the development and design of an advanced two-way metering infrastructure system as the preferred alternative for future customer metering and to be assumed as a part of the integrated customer technology program that includes the new data customer information system, CSI, and meter datering management, MDM.
Is there a second?
Mr. Commissioner, I have two comment. I'd like to strike two words.
We've got to get a second first.
All right. Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Now, discussion. You have some comments?
Yes, I do. On page two of the resolution, third from the bottom paragraph starts the AMI meters. The district is considering provide very infrequent pulses of RF. We conclude that the best available research indicates that likely there is not significant increase. I'd like to strike the word likely. And in addition, on the bottom paragraph, the district is committed to offering an opt-out option for customers who do not want an AMI meter at their home. During the design and request for proposal process, staff will continue to review technology offerings and look for feasible, attractive options. I would like to strike the word feasible. So that it would read, look for attractive options.
So we can handle this a couple of ways if the maker of the motion is agreeable to those two changes. I don't know that we have to go through a formal amendment process.
Well, I think we do.
I would go through the amendment process.
Okay. In that case, we'll need a motion to amend what has been presented to us by deletion of those two words. And it'll need to be seconded, and then it will be voted on separately, and then the revised document will be voted on.
Correct.
But if there is a motion and a second on the floor, I take that as a motion to amend, and if there's not a second, it will die for lack of a second.
So, and I can't do that.
You can't do it.
I can't do it.
He can make the motion.
I think I just heard Commissioner Smith say he was accepting that as a motion to amend.
Oh, he was accepting it.
No. What Dennis said, no. He was the maker of the motion. He said no.
No.
No. Maybe I misunderstood you.
No. I understand that Mr. Arsenault is proposing an amendment, and it would require a second.
Right.
And then there would be discussion on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I will second it because I want to have that discussion.
Oh, okay. Well, but I believe, and that you can correct, if you, I think I know Roberts, if you both agree, the maker and the seconder agree, I don't know that we have to go through that process.
Yes, we do.
So for safety's sake, I would suggest you go through the process.
Yeah. Okay. So he seconded your amendment.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would keep the word likely. But strike the word feasible. That would be my input.
There's one amendment on the. You guys are trying to play with my mind.
See, we are. You can see how good you are.
So far, there is one amendment that deletes the word likely and the word feasible. And the debate on the amendment mm-hmm. has only been debate that leaving the word likely in
mm-hmm. and striking the word feasible.
Yeah.
If you guys would have talked ahead of time, you could have had this all ironed out.
Yeah, but I'm not sure that's something we should do.
that's an amendment to the amendment?
No, there's no second for it.
Mine was just a comment. The reason why I seconded it is because I wanted to have the opportunity to express my opinion that the word likely should stay and feasibility should be struck.
Okay, for discussion purposes, just to protect ourselves, certainly likely has to be in the motion. So I support your change.
Well, we're not there protocol-wise yet because that means you're seconding his amendment to the amendment.
I know.
And that's fine. Yeah, that is fine.
It's just discussion.
No, we're a small body, so we can simplify Robert's rules.
Well, see, that's what I was just told.
We're a small body, so we should be able to.
But I was told no by the,
I know,
the person
I know.
Involved.
So I think that you're able to, but I have one commissioner that's suggesting he prefers the longer process.
Well, we've adopted Robert's rules of order, and I think we should adhere to that. When practical or feasible.
But I think that one groups, again. I think we're okay. I
think Robert's rules allows the mover and the seconder to.
For small bodies.
That's what I said to begin with. So, I'm hearing, let's try the conversational approach for a moment.
I think you could have Commissioner Arsenault, assuming he's agreeable, accept Commissioner Bowles'
friendly amendment
to the new resolution.
I will accept Commissioner Bull's friendly amendment.
That's very friendly. So the
So the
change is the word feasible.
The feasible would remain, likely would be struck. Excuse me.
No.
Now you're messing with my mind.
Yeah. Well, that's because I lost mine. Likely would stay, feasible would be struck.
Yes, the current proposal is that feasible would go, likely would stay.
So that would be the amendment.
Okay. Likely in, feasible out.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, the only alternative resolution we weren't prepared for. So
that's the copy I don't have.
Yep. So we will have to get a signature copy if it's successful.
Right.
To you later.
So, Steve. Knowing we're small groups, I think, Steve, are you listening, Steve?
I'm really trying to listen very hard. I was someone to review it one more time I could understand the logic of the changes.
When we get there, we will review it, but I'm not sure we're ready yet.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And yes, I'm still here.
Okay. Got it. So what I am... The original wording will be changed to eliminate the word feasible on the last line, period.
Right.
If the amendment is adopted.
Does that make sense, Steve?
Yeah, could you reread the sentence as the suggested amendment would read then?
The suggested amendment on the second page, which is of... I think that's the second page. The last line would be review technology offerings and look for attractive options.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Now that's the amendment that we're about, if there's no more discussion, we're about to vote on the amendment to remove the word feasible.
May I comment?
You bet.
Mr. Chairman. Oftentimes, as the facilitator of the meeting, you don't vote, except in cases where there's a tie. But if it's a really critical issue, the president should vote, and I'm hoping you will vote.
Mm-hmm. I always have the choice, and I understand that.
Right.
And I've never opted out, especially on a critical vote.
So. Good.
Yes. So we have an amendment. If there's no more discussion, we'll vote on the amendment to the resolution, which would remove the word feasible on the last line of page 2. All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? And I'm going to say aye on that.
And I'm abstaining from that
vote. Yep.
So we'll have to get that one.
Okay, we're now looking at a revised resolution number 9, which removes the word feasible from the last line of the second page. Any further discussion on the resolution? Not case. All those in favor of the resolution signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Opposed?
No.
And one no vote. The resolution is passed.
Could I take one moment just to say what we'll be doing next now as a
sure.
result of that vote?
Sure.
So this establishes the planning regime for staff. So we understand decisions like when we move forward with the customer information system, how we should set that up. There's a preferred alternative assumption that we will be going down the path of AMI. One of the comments that was made today was we don't know the makers or models. That's true. We don't know that at this point. So what we would plan to do is as we move forward, and it will not be immediately, we would move forward with ultimately a request for proposals that would create a set of options that will come back. So there, this sets up a series of decisions. And as I said earlier, no board can commit a future board. Mm-hmm. So there'll be a series of decisions with respect to how we proceed with the customer information system, how we proceed with an RFP for meters. There is a presumed assumption here with respect to opt-out. I heard the request, I think, from Commissioner Congdon that we look further at the opt-in option. We will do that. There are a couple of the utilities who have adopted that, so we will be gathering information on that, bring that back to you as well. So there's a series of steps here is the main point I want to leave you with, and it will take us quite a while, actually, to go through those steps. Okay.
All right. I believe the next item on our agenda is Resolution 19.
That's correct.
I just want to say thank you to all of you folks who have put in so much time and made the trip down, and thanks for your input.
Yeah. Let's take like a 5-minute break. Yeah. Back in session.
Sure.
We are now considering resolution number 19.
Yes. Resolution 19. Right. Resolution authorizing the general manager to enter into a services agreement, SA number 16-106, with Enablon North American Corporation of Chicago, Illinois, and Optimit NA. LLC DBA Standard Model Partners of Chicago, Illinois for governance, risk, and compliance, software as service systems, implementation services, maintenance, and support. Both shall be presenting for us.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Todd Walsh. I'm a senior systems analyst in our information technology department and project manager for this governance, risk, and compliance system.
And I'm Karen Wiggum, staff attorney, and I've been working with Todd for a while now on this contract.
So, as Steve mentioned, Resolution 19 is asking for authorization to enter into a contract with Enablon North America for our governance, risk, and compliance system. Governance, risk, and compliance is also known as by the acronym GRC. And the practice of GRC is strategy, business processes, and systems for corporate governance, enterprise risk management, and corporate compliance. As our compliance obligations and responsibilities are continuing to increase, and what we're seeking is a system that provides us a single repository of all our compliance obligations. The system will also provide us a set of common business processes to follow across the entire district, workflow, task management features to help make sure we're keeping on schedule and manage our compliance obligation. Also, since it's a database-type repository that holds all our compliance tasks, it'll also give us an audit trail to help communicating with our auditors to demonstrate compliance. And finally, it'll provide a dashboard-style reporting, which is a web-based system so that everybody across the organization has a view and transparency for all our compliance obligations. That way, the knowledge is not all held by one individual or single person. So to pull this off, we selected Enablon in their implementation partner, their name is Stand Model Partners, through our RFP process. A lot of people have been involved throughout this whole RFP process, so it's a wide-ranging team, including some people in the audience today. Pam Wilson, who's our certified GRC expert, Michelle Smith and Marty Whiteman, who are representing Natural Resources Compliance, Melinda Barnes, who's representing is our compliance manager, and our PCS group, Alex Burkhardt, has put in a lot of effort help preparing these contract documents. So through this, we issued the RFP in August 2016, and because this is a new system for us, you know, we spent a lot of time in due diligence making sure that we could manage all our risk with this project. So we conducted extensive reference checks with all the proposers, conducted interviews with all the proposers, and in the October-November timeframe, we had on-site demos from various providers of GRC systems to help select the preferred vendor. So we notified Enablon in the December timeframe that they were the apparent successful vendor. And we've had successful negotiations with them over the last few months. And the contract is ready for signature. Once we have authorization to proceed, the contract is a 3-year term valued at $1.2 million over the entire 3 years. And that includes the software licensing, implementation services, and ongoing support from the vendor. We are purchasing their software as a service system. And what that means is that they are hosting the software for us at their certified secure data center in the United States. Reviewing this project kind of as a pilot, so if everything goes well, we have the ability to renew the contract for additional 3-year terms. And we've capped in our pricing for that so that we don't have any large price increases, you know, over the long run. If it is successful, we do renew it after 3 years. We are also managing the risk during this 3-year implementation through fixed price milestones. So we've develop a project plan that allows us to implement the project in phases so that we can terminate the contract if Enablon can't achieve deliverables acceptance during the implementation time period. So that helps us manage our costs during the contract.
Okay. And that's all. May I make a statement as well? Uh-huh. Commissioners, you might have noticed over the last year or so that I have a single balance scorecard metric that I report to you on. And this is it. So, Pam's laughing.
We all.
So I actually am very careful in how I draft those, although I point that out and maybe I'll have more next year. So I just want to say that as the chief compliance officer and the general counsel, we spent a lot of time in my group working with the stakeholders, and the business units identifying, tracking, meeting, and documenting that we have met our many, many compliance obligations. How we do that in the district is differently for virtually every business unit. Some business units track their compliance obligations through Access, Microsoft Access systems. Others use Maximo. Some use spreadsheets. So what we're really trying to do with this contract, and it's been an exhaustive effort over the last couple of years for this team, is standardize a platform, one solution, for the district to identify, monitor, update, and meet all of those compliance obligations in a fashion that's user-friendly, consistent. So if we lose the person that knew how to track an obligation in old Access software, someone could pick right up where that person had left off and move forward. And then provide visibility across the district to the supervisors and the managers as to how and whether certain obligations have been met. And frankly, provide those folks who we think have personal accountability for satisfying those compliance obligations, the making sure the box is checked. Sometimes there's not a common understanding of that responsibility and where it resides. So this provides that single source solution district-wide. It's being implemented And I would say a couple of very enthusiastic departments, natural resources and risk at this point, to try it out, to upload the data, to actually take some data that other consultants have been compiling for us and it will upload to the system, and get it into shape and get it working so that we can see it, and hopefully we will have eager adoption of the single platform district-wide. So I think there's tremendous value in this platform, and I have great personal appreciation for the team that has been working on this patiently for more than 2 years now. I know that Todd and even Marty have had several trips back to Chicago, and we've had a lot of meetings with presentations by the presenters, and the EnableOn standard was the unanimous selection of the team.
I have one question, and it's the last paragraph on the first page. Within the district's discretion, the contract provides optional pricing for additional software modules, and it may be renewed for an additional 3-year term. Can you help me with that?
Yeah, so as Eric mentioned, I think, so we're starting out with compliance and enterprise risk management mm-hmm. portions or modules or applications within their software.
Okay.
They cover many other areas for governance, risk, and compliance, including health and safety and human resources. So if it goes well, you know, we're hoping that it could also be a system we could use in those areas as well. So we asked for optional pricing to limit the price increases. And so we have until June 2019.
Okay.
That optional pricing is good till June 2019.
All right. So, yeah, that was really how I read it, but I just wanted to see if I was reading that.
So if it goes well, then we can exercise that option, but we don't have to.
And so, but the prices are...
The price for those optional pieces are not included in the $1.2 million.
Right.
So if we exercise those, then we would probably be back here. But that would be a good news story.
Right, yeah. And so prices agreed upon are current? And would those change by 2019?
No, the prices are fixed for the optional pricing for those modules, right?
Thank you.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. That helps.
I'm just curious. So can you break this down? How much of this cost is like the initial cost, and how much of that is for ongoing maintenance and support? And I'm asking that mainly because I'm on another board and we're adopting some software, and it seems to me like the price that we're looking at for the ongoing maintenance is really high. So just for basis of comparison.
The licensing for the software is, I'm rounding a little bit, is $180,000 a year. So over that initial 3-year term, $540,000 is just for licensing the software. And that includes a basic level of maintenance and support. You know, so we get uptime criteria they have to meet, and they have to resolve defects and bugs in their system at no cost to us, because that's covered by that software licensing. So that's $540,000. The implementation services are $320,000 a year, or total, sorry. So the fixed price milestones, when we're implementing this project in phases, we're paying them consulting services to help us get that system up and running. That gets us to about $860,000 total. And we are also retaining standard model partners at about $70,000 a year over a 3-year term for their GRC expertise, since this is a new system for us, so they're going to be kind of like our coaches and mentors, mm-hmm. and showing us how to use the system. They'll be kind of our on-call support if users have any questions until we develop that capability ourselves.
So this price should track way down after 3 years.
Yeah, for the renewal term, we locked in the prices by only allowing a 3% increase in the annual software licensing and maintenance.
So that's a 3-year subscription term, and so that's for the existing licenses. But if we do additional modules, we'll have similar costs for implementation of new modules.
Sure, but for this particular proposal right here, after the 3-year term, where we are up and running and we've been coached, and then that support and maintenance should fall off.
somewhat, certainly somewhat, right?
Well, yeah, I think right. The base piece, which is like $180,000 a year for a three-year term, so that's an annual cost, $180,000. And then if we choose to renew for an additional three-year period, then that would be, there's a cap of 3% on any additional subscription fees, 3% per year.
But I think that the answer to your question is yes.
Yeah, the answer. I think the answer to your question is yes.
After yes.
So there's
yes.
certain costs that are going to go
Thank
away
you.
After a period of time because you've got startup costs basically that you're paying as part of this contract, and those.
That's correct. The $320,000 is a startup cost. We wouldn't have that in the three-year period.
And then it would be a decision after the three-year term whether or not we needed to retain the consulting services of Standard Model Partners at the annual fee. Yeah. So, $180,000 to $185,000 a year plus whatever increase in price capped for the three-year term at 3% for the first renewal term, it could, you know, go on 6 years from now, it could increase. But at least they've done a really nice job protecting our known costs for the next 6 years. So it could go down to literally $185,000 to $190,000 a year.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I was asking. Yeah. Thank you.
And I should say that the software licensing entitles us to 250 users, which is more than enough.
Okay.
Right now,
okay.
Probably, in the, you know, even in the renewal term.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioners, yeah. Is there a motion to approve Resolution 19?
I move approval of Resolution 19 as presented.
Is there a second?
Second.
Been moved and seconded to approve Resolution 19 as presented. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Steve, are you there, Steve?
I said aye.
Oh, okay. We didn't hear you. Okay. There, I got you that time. Those opposed? Passed unanimously. You're completed on manager items?
We are.
I think we're completed on commission items?
No, I was just waving goodbye to the staff.
Oh.
As they intelligently exit the room.
Do you have any follow-up on delegation? You did one earlier today.
We did have one, right? One action item today.
Oh, that's okay. That's the delegation. That's the next one, yeah.
Yep,
okay.
Sorry.
Go
we
for
are
it.
Done with one from last meeting.
Okay.
Mike Coleman is going to get back to you on historical comparison of the maximum monthly bandwidth usage.
Okay.
That one. Miss anything?
And seeing no public in the room.
Maybe this is embedded in, you know, what you already said in with the AMI discussion, but just my request that we really look closely at what opt-in really means and what the cost would be and if it's feasible and just get us some more information.
Yep. We owe you that. Yep.
No public.
There's no public in the room, so there's no additional public comment.
Yeah.
Any other matters to come before us before we move into an executive session? How long will that we need in that executive session?
60 minutes.
Okay, at this time we will, I don't think, we've already had a break, so we'll move directly into executive session to discuss with legal counsel agency enforcement actions, litigation, potential litigation to which the district or its board is or is likely to become a party and or legal risks as authorized by the RCWs. We're coming out of executive session. No votes were taken. No decisions were made. It's 5 minutes to four. Are there any additional items to come before the commission at this time?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to suggest a motion.
Okay.
I would like to move to set a special meeting for the board for Monday, December 11th, 2017 at 3 p.m. Located at the offices of the Chelan County Commissioners at 400 Douglas Street in Wenatchee for the purpose of discussing the Shoreline Master Program with the Chelan County Commissioners.
Motion's been made. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is carried. Is there any other business to come before the commission today? Hearing none, we will stand adjourned.